It's okay. It's okay. He won't hurt us. He would have killed me by now. Okay? I think it's because we're not actually part of the movie. He doesn't really know what to do with us.
Hello and welcome to another movie podcast. The show has dates and lectures in Columbus, a relic seminar in the Lost City of Z, a fire in Ebbing, Missouri, and fly lenses in Dunkirk. I am Oscar. With me today is...
Ralph?
You gonna get it?
No, I got the reference.
Good.
Well, just didn't know what you mentioned. Dunkirk.
Remember 2 years ago, I made one up with just numbers? Because there's so many titles with numbers in them. I couldn't think of a good one, this one. Not enough numbers. A lot of twos, because there's a lot of sequels, but that doesn't mean that there's a lot of numbers in movie titles.
That's interesting.
Anyway.
I don't know. That's your job. Exactly. That's my job, just to sit here and talk. You should know this by now. I'd say 44.
Close. This is episode number 43. And today we will be discussing our last 4 out of 4 top 10 show, which is our top 10 films of 2017. Finally. Feedback can always be sent to and produced by... Ish. Not really produced by. Podmoviecast@gmail.com. Especially if you contest with our top 10. I want to know what you think of it. Top 10 shows, Ralph, I don't know if you know this, typically for any podcaster, especially film review podcast, they tend to be the highest, not the highest rated, but the highest viewed and listened to show of the year, because everyone loves watching and hearing and listening to top 10s.
Yeah.
Have you listened to a bunch yet?
No.
We're one of the last podcasts to do it, and we explained on the last show why we waited this long. But just in case you weren't around for that last show, because some people might skip that one, we'll mention it here real
quick. No, I don't want to be, influenced by anybody's top 10. So I haven't listened to shit.
Oh, I listen to a bunch. I mean, it doesn't mean they'll influence me, but yeah.
Well, no, I just sometimes, you know, like, movie must move up here. I want to make my own decisions.
Right. Also, like, there's lot of recency bias. I rewatched a bunch of films, like Get Out, for example. I saw that last night. And, like, you know, recency bias tends to
influence top 10s. Sure, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, that's beside the point. Well, why do we wait so long, Ralph, to review our top 10 shows?
Well, there's a couple reasons, but yeah. I think the main reason is that we are poor motherfuckers,
mm-hmm.
and we do not get screeners for a lot of the movies, and have to go ahead and, you know, pay out of our own pocket, watch our movies at our own time, and it's next to impossible when all the fucking top whatever movies, like the top 10 movies or whatever, come out in fucking 1 month. Like, so go fuck yourselves. It takes us a while to watch some movies.
Yeah, I totally agreement. And also, it just gives us more time to do that. And as well as, you know, we're in Chicago. Unfortunately, as big as we are and as great as we are in a lot of things, culturally speaking, even in cinema, we're not as good as LA and New York, where they get a lot of first-run movies that aren't even out here at all. Sometimes for weeks. So we have to wait on some of them. For example, like, we're counting The Phantom Thread as 2018 because it's released here in 2018. And there's nothing we can do about it, for example. Luke might have a similar feeling for a different movie that we don't count, but that's a different story. Anyway, that's how we do it. That's why we wait so long. That's why we give you other top 10 shows to whet your appetite, so to speak. It also gives a finality, a final period with little comments and ellipses to the year 2017. We want to end it now. And knowing full well that the Academy Awards have not done their nominations, announced their nominations, we will be doing a show related to that at a later date, but we're not going to talk much about it here today. My last thing before we get into our top 10 is to follow us at our website, otherpodcast.com, where you can find the top 10 for this show and all the other shows we've done this month and last year, a lot of them. If you want to listen and get the nice finality of the year wrapped up in a bow, in a present, once and for all. So, Ralph, let's say we carry on and do our top 10 shows. Luke will be joining us live.
Live, yeah.
Yeah, we're doing a Skype Discord thing. So
just Discord.
Let's just dive into it now, shall we?
Might as well.
Cool.
What's in there is ours. It belongs to us. They took our money, our hard-earned paper. They snuck in when we were asleep last night and took the pants off the chair and emptied our wallets. They got what's rightfully ours. Let's go get it back. What's rightfully ours? What the fuck is this man?
Austin Powers.
Doc said Michael Myers.
This is Mike Myers.
It should be the Halloween mask.
This is a Halloween mask.
No, the killer dude from Halloween.
Oh, you mean Jason.
No! Huh? Fuck! Let's go.
Wait. I gotta start the song over.
The fuck?
Okay, go.
All right, guys, let's get on with our top 10 movies of 2017. But first, let's say hi to Luke. Luke, are you there?
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Dr. Nick. First of all, real quick, how's it going over there?
It's pretty nice over here.
That's great. That's great. That's great. Just start recording now. thanks for live Skyping, Discording with us in order to do this instead of you having me having to splice in recordings of you talking about it to yourself.
No issues. I miss talking to you guys.
I thought you were going to say you miss talking to yourself, but I'm sure you're doing plenty of that. Anyway, this is how we're going to do it today, guys. I'm going to go first. Roth will go second. Luca will go third. And how we're going to do it, and we're only going to do this one little thing, where we have a few duplicates. We know each other's list in advance. We have a few duplicates, more than a few. So when we get to them, like if my 10 is Roth's number 5, I'm going to wait until we get to Roth's number 5 in order for both of us to talk about it.
And then the person who had it higher on their list gets first dibs?
Right, first dibs to say their first opinions on it.
And then everybody else gets to chime in on the movie, whoever else had it.
Because we have, the three of us have some that all of us have. So it's going to be interesting, and it's going to be fun. That's the only real rule we have, but we're going 10 to 1, like regular 10 to 1.
We don't want to talk about the same movie over and over again,
right,
or just be like, what this guy said.
Right, you know, listen to 10 minutes ago.
Yeah,
right. Pretty much.
So without further ado, I'm going to start it off here. My number 10, and all of this is going off the top of my head. We have a lot of equipment around us. I don't have all the info, but I'm going to do my best here. My number 10 is a movie that came out earlier in the year in 2017. It's called The Lost City of Z.
Incorrect. That's your number. No, I was going to say.
The Lost City of Z, which has no duplicates to anyone else. So
no, it does not.
But Roth and I reviewed it on episode number 34, which is kind of more of a recent episode. It came out in the fall.
Yeah, but it was one of those movies
where we're catching up on the year.
Exactly.
Yeah. Roth wanted to catch it up in the year because I was, like, you know, raving about it. Anyway, The Lost City of Z is James Gray's latest film, the guy who brought us We Own the Night, and that movie on Netflix that came out with...
Super Helpful.
I know, I just don't have all the information on me. Anyway, The Immigrant.
Oh, yeah.
Immigrant. Mm-hmm. Very good movie. I think Luke and I have seen that. We both like it. This movie is one of the most, my top five, I guess, beautiful movies of the year. The cinematography alone of this film shows the splendor and the art regarding the man Percy Fawcett, I think his name is. This guy from the, 1400s, who's discovering the Amazon for the first time, looking for the lost city of gold, El Dorado, right? And it's really about the process and the obsession that this guy brings on and the toll that he brings on the weight of all this historical stuff that he's in the making of while, you know, being about him as a person, while being about his family as well. And the toll and the legacy that he's leaving his family as he's alive and doing things. And it's kind of hard to explain without really spoiling a whole lot of the movie, which I won't really do because it's one of those movies that it's not like Spider-Man Homecoming, where if I feel like if Spider-Man was my number 10, I can spoil it because everyone's kind of seen it. And if you haven't, that's kind of tough titties for you because it's everywhere.
Yeah.
But Lost City of Z, not that super popular, looks like $1 billion, but it didn't make much money. So, but I really highly recommend it. And this is the only movie where Charlie Hunnam actually really dukes it out in his acting career. I think this is a really good movie, acting wise. I think
Charlie Hunnam
really
had like two, three movies this year, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He had a couple. He surprised us with, I forget the other movie, but he surprised us with another movie.
The King?
The King Arthur.
King Arthur, yeah.
Right. He wasn't bad. But that was more like his original shtick. This one, he is playing like a guy who is very forward-thinking for his time, for his century, in a land where he is obsessed with finding this city that doesn't exist. The mystery of the city isn't part of the thing. The Lost City of Z is the title of his obsession. And his... what goes beyond obsession is what the movie tackles as a theme and as a plot even. So I think it's an amazing movie. James Gray always does amazing movies. It's hard to pick my number 10, and I wanted to pick a beautiful movie that I can never have regrets on. And The Lost City of Z is beautiful, and not just visual, but also in acting, and philosophical splendor.
Sure.
So that's my number 10.
Cool.
Roth, what is your number?
My number 10 will have to be set at a later time.
Ooh,
because cool. Somebody else has it on their list a little bit higher than me. So, Luke, go ahead.
Okay.
I'm going to save that. My number 10.
My number 10 is the only documentary I think I have on my list, so
dude,
shocker.
All of us. All of us. That's the only documentary out of all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Slow year for documentaries, I guess. All right. This one was the, I believe PBS was the one that made it, but it was on Netflix, Oklahoma City.
From Oklahoma?
Was it on Netflix?
Yeah, it was on Netflix.
Yeah.
Well, it still is on Netflix.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Is that what you say? You're making fun of him?
No, I meant like as in like... Oh. I didn't know it was a Netflix original.
It is. Like only
I didn't
they
know
have
it was
it.
A Netflix
original. Yeah. So, I mean, we all know about Timothy McVeigh and, you know, the bombing of the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in April 1995. But this kind of takes you this whole thing of kind of like what O.J. Made in America did, where it shows you what the landscape of the country was at the time and what people were feeling at the time. This kind of focuses on what... Timothy McVeigh was going through, especially when, you know, it talked about Ruby Ridge and also Waco, and that and the kind of ties that he, you know, was surrounded in.
Yeah. Okay.
So yeah, so I really enjoyed it.
Does it get more in depth to like the person behind it?
I think it's perspective. It brings in a bigger picture
exactly.
To a big tragedy. I think that's what's really good. I liked it too. I saw it earlier in the year also.
Oh, okay, cool. I didn't see it.
I recommend it.
Yeah.
Also.
I mean, on top of that, you also get more insight on Ruby Ridge, which I knew nothing about, and Waco.
Me either, exactly. I knew more about Waco for sure, but Ruby Ridge I knew virtually nothing about, seeing the perspective of what they interviewed and stuff. And
right.
Yeah, it was really good.
There's actually a Waco show that's coming out right now.
I was about to say that on the
Paramount channel.
On the Paramount channel, yeah.
Oh, really? What's
it
called?
Which used to be Spike.
Yeah. I was stealing my thunder. You're stealing my thunder. Fuck. I was about to say the same thing.
Thanks, Luke. It was worth seeing him. The new Spike was canceled and named something else, so that's good.
Spike was bought out by Paramount. Paramount called it Paramount Channel. Congratulations.
Yeah.
And the original show was about Waco.
Nice. That's their first one? First standalone?
Yeah, it's supposed to be like a mini-series.
Nice.
Maybe not a documentary, but not really, I think. Or reenacting. I don't know.
Okay, cool.
Interesting.
Well, I mean, we're off topic now. But yeah, that's cool. So that's Oklahoma City, right?
Yes, it is. Oklahoma City.
All right. Luke's number 10. We're out to me again. My number 9 will have to wait because not only is in one of your other lists, but it's in both of your lists too, guys. So we're going to wait double time for my number 9. So we're on to number Ruff. What is your number 9?
My number 9.
Here we go. Here comes the duplicates.
I started the chain. Will have to wait due to another person in the same room as me.
Right, so that's giving it a lot away.
Go ahead. Look.
Okay. What's your number 9? Chains, my number 9 is also on someone else's list. So
this is all our lists. Wow. Yeah. Okay, we're well, back to me again. So all of our number 9s are related to other. Some other lists,
and we will let you know when we get to those numbers. Which one?
Trust me, we're keeping tab right now. So my number 8. Now we're back to circle again. My number 8 is a movie that none of you have.
No,
I didn't get to see it. I wanted to watch it.
You guys haven't seen
same
it.
Here. No, I haven't seen it either.
It's called Ma. No, it's called Mother. Mother with exclamation mark. This is a bonus that is due to come out next month, folks. So prime opportunity to check up on your bonuses. It came out 5 months ago. 5 months ago, we did it for the bonus. I think it came out for the month of August, maybe September. I forget exactly. But we recorded that 5 months later in February. That's when it's going to come out for everyone. Mother is Darren Aronofsky's latest film, his most personal yet and most ambiguous, not ambiguous, but the film that is almost 100% metaphor, which is strange to say because I can see a lot of people hating this movie. I gave it a positive review. I've seen a lot of people give it positive reviews, but I've seen just as many in controversial manners say it's the worst piece of shit out there because it doesn't have any substance, doesn't have any story. I did that bonus episode with my cousin and my girlfriend Lexi. It's a great episode. I hope you guys listen to it. And in Mother, it's essentially it's about this couple who lives in this house.
Missed opportunity to say Mother.
Yeah, nice. It stars Jennifer Lawrence and
not Love Hewitt.
Nope. I almost
but you wanted
Hewitt.
To see it. Though. You wanted to see that, didn't you?
I can't believe Jennifer Love Hewitt came in my head.
Why was she even relevant?
No,
I don't know.
She's not.
That's what I'm saying. How did that name come up?
For some reason, like, our childhood steps in and Love Hewitt needs to...
Right, 200 Cigarettes and that show she was on. And do you guys remember those?
No.
I remember 200 Cigarettes.
Of course you do. Anyway, Mother, like I said, we're off topic again. Stars Jennifer Lawrence and Javier Bardem. It also has Etta Harris and Michelle Pfeiffer. A very good Michelle Pfeiffer, by the way. And this movie is a couple's relationship is tested when uninvited guests arrive at their home, disrupting their tranquil existence. But that is nothing. That is not even a plot. That is barely the surface of this movie. This movie is about this house, about the care that this Jennifer Lawrence character, which her name is Her. She doesn't have a name. And is cared for this house, and the analogies and the metaphors of what this house represents and what the actions that you're about to see and unfold and dramatically get crazy and very much Requiem for a Dream kind of settings, how much that affects her and the punishing toll it gets. I think Jennifer Lawrence's best performance might be this movie, because the camera never moves her from one side. It's always on close-up, if not a medium shoulder. Almost all the time. I think 100% of what we see from her is that. And that's how close the camera is all the time. And it is to give us a complete POV of her state of emotions at any given point. And that could be from a party of these people who are taking advantage of her house when they shouldn't be, to the depravity of seemingly years passing of humanity inside her house as things go haywire from the birth of her baby and what that signifies to the man in the house who is supposed to represent, in my opinion, something akin to a god, and she represents something akin to Mother Nature. Now, that is my interpretation. The great thing about this movie, really, is that Ralph can watch it, Luke can watch it, you guys can have equally great, supported, completely different opinions of what the movie is about than I would. And we'd all be right. And that's what the metaphor movie is about. And Mother is the only movie that can be called that. And there's very few movies that can do that. And I think this Aronofsky did a great job. And for that reason alone, it should be on my list. And for also having best acting and all that stuff, it solidifies it to be on my list. So that's my number 8 movie of 2017.
Right on.
Right on, boy. And then we're going to Roth's number 8.
Yep. My number 8 is on somebody else's list.
Your number 8 is on
another
person's list.
You won't hear about it, but you are about to hear my number 10.
Oh, soon, yes. Very soon. all right. What is your number 8, Luke?
Okay, my number 8 is The Big Sick, which is also Ralph's number 10.
Exactly.
Nice.
Lead it on, Luke.
So, yeah, The Big Sick, we reviewed this one on episode 36. Pretty much the romantic comedy. Oh, God, I'm going to butcher his name. Kumail Nanjiani, whatever.
Nanjiani.
Kumail Nanjiani.
Yeah.
I got you, bro.
Pretty much this kind of a biopic story of his life and how he met his wife.
Yeah, minor differences in the story, but it's pretty much.
And the cast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the cast, for sure. Yeah, except for Kumail, which he gets to relive his past.
He married Rita Romano's daughter.
That's funny.
Yeah. I actually, I was looking forward to the movie when it came out, and then it was limited release, and then it just, it was a pain.
I missed
it too.
So, well, no, I didn't miss it. I saw it in theaters.
But I didn't get to see it in theaters. I get to saw it on VOD, VOD. And it was a really good movie. I thought it was well written. I think it's a really cool rom-com. It's what it is. It's a rom-com.
Yeah, and it's a really, really good one.
It's a really good one. And I think it's a good one because it's such a unique story and it's just authentic. It doesn't feel anything. Nothing feels hammed on, because everything, although some of it does feel cheesy, but it's just like, it's not that bad. It's a rom-com. Like, I don't have a big deal about it. And I don't usually like too many rom-coms. I think it's because of the oversaturation and
the stigmas.
Also, back in the day, but now we don't even get rom-coms anymore. This movie got nominated for original screenplay.
Right. I was going to say that at the end of what you guys said.
Don't worry. I saw your eagerness to say something.
Well, no. I just wanted to mention, because you just forget. I was like, oh, and also nominated for a screenplay. There you go.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, no. It was good. It was a good movie. It was a nice story. That's why I made my number 10. I'm glad I made your list too, Luke.
Oh, yeah. I remember, I think the first time I saw it was on one of my many plane rides or flights. And I was like, holy shit, this is a really good movie. And then I think I automatically bought it on iTunes when it popped back up.
Nice.
For a good price.
Awesome.
Nice. And that is Luke's number 8, which is also Ralph's number 10. The Big Sick. So my number, let's see where we are now. My number 7 coincides with one of Ralph's, which also coincides with somebody else, which is Luke. Oh, so yeah. I'm going to have to save that. So I'm going to save my number 7 for next time. Ralph, what is your number 7?
My number 7 is going to have to wait. Somebody else has it higher.
It's close, though. It's really close.
It is close.
All right.
All right. Luke's number 7.
Yeah, another one we're going to have to wait for because someone else has it.
Right.
So we're on, man, this is flying by. We're on 6 already.
I know. I don't think we're going to take a break. We can just do this directly.
Take breaks.
And we could actually do your number 6, Oscar.
Oh, can we now? Yeah. Yes.
Yes, we can.
Wait, are we sure we can?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Did it make your list? What's wrong?
I never saw it.
Oh, okay. Well, that's your problem.
That's what's wrong with him.
Oh, sorry.
Despite that, I probably own it on iTunes.
Yeah, I think you
bought this movie. Like, I don't even own it.
Oh, nice. Okay, my number 6, which is Ralph's number 9, is the Lego Batman movie. And I say that without any reservation whatsoever. Yeah, go ahead. Look at me. I put a kid's film that's like a mile a minute jokes about Lego blocks in my top 10 movies of an entire year. It's an amazing movie. Not
Batman doesn't do ships.
What?
Relationships.
Yeah.
Pewter.
I just want him to say that all day. And everyone shoots with the
pew,
but
it's funny.
Yeah,
it's really funny. It is the best characterization of Batman and Bruce Wayne. Well, more Batman for sure than Bruce Wayne, but some of Bruce Wayne too. It's the best characterization and takedown of Batman that I've ever seen in any movie. Tim Burton, Nolan, it doesn't matter. I think they all missed the mark when it comes to the amount of highlights, amazing truths that this movie drops on the character of Batman. Yeah. And also our cultural viewpoint on Batman.
Yeah, that's a really...
It's such a well-thought-out and extremely mild-a-minute laugh fest. I think I laughed the most on this movie. There's some movies where one scene had one big laugh that I always remember and all that, but this one had the most laughs on any other movie. I've seen it 3 times. It's on HBO Now or Go, by the way. That's why I saw it more times. I don't regret any solid second. A lot of people like the Lego movie, and I'm with them. It was a great movie, but I think the fact that this one came from such a pop culture thing from the 60s, right? That's when the Batman started.
I think so.
Until now, I think that all of that weight from all of his drama and, you know, crime alley about his parents and all that stuff, like, crap, it takes it down by being funny and also, like, perfectly poignant at the same time. And I can't say any more about it. It's just kind of hard to really review a movie that's just, like, really because everything they say, it is comedic and up to a point and a beat. But they keep following those up with your knowledge of Batman.
Yeah.
And it works so well.
It works really well, yeah.
And obviously, the more you know Batman, the more you get all the references in the background. And even the casting is done perfectly.
Yeah, I love Will Arnett as the Batman.
Yes, he is. I never liked the Will Arnett in anything.
Yeah.
Now I do.
Actually, I just don't like his face.
Yeah, I want to punch him.
Yeah. I think mainly in Arrested Development, but yeah.
Yeah, probably.
And Zach Galifianakis is the Joker. Great.
Yeah, it's perfect.
He was a great Joker.
I love how the movie depicts them as a loving relationship because they always fight each other and never get away, you know, they always get away from each other. It's so perfect. And they have the best casting, I think, with the villains that come in the third act, which I won't spoil here, but they do perfect cast villains that actually correlate to the characters they're playing in such a beautifully intelligent way that you have to look it up, guys, if you've seen the movie and you know what I'm talking about. It's so good. Ralph, what do you have to say about the movie?
No, I mean, I agree with everything you just said. I love the fact that there's all these references and it calls out Batman, like, why he's cool, but why he shouldn't be cool either. Like, how he gets away with, like, how the Batman, the character, gets away with a lot of things. Because everyone's just like, well, he's Batman. He saved the world again. Or he saved Gotham City.
But crime has never gone down.
But crime never goes down. It's really funny. And even though it's not called Crime Alley, like, they just make fun of it so much. And it's great how you get to see... And they've done it in all the Batman movies, but Batman grow And this one, it's like the main thing, though. That's the main thing about the story. And the other one is just about him taking a villain down in all the other movies we've seen.
And Alfred as the, like, the child.
Yeah, Ralph Fiennes plays
the father with the adopted kid and how he has to treat him.
Yeah.
It's perfect. It's exactly what he said.
Yeah, it really is. It's really funny. So it was a really cool movie. I love the beginning of this movie where everyone's looking for Batman and then he pops out of nowhere. And he's still the same Lego Batman from the Lego movie.
Right, so, the master builder. Type.
Right, he's like the master builder kind of thing. So that plays into it. But he also has his own like death metal music, which is really funny because once he starts jamming to something, he's like,
Let's Get Nuts mix.
Yeah,
which is from Michael Keaton's Batman.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Right, exactly. And like I said, the references are really great. But the dialogue just is what gets me. And like not only the references... the dialogue references, but the visual references are everywhere. Everywhere.
And like, it's easy to miss them, too.
I've seen the movie three times. Yeah. And in the three movies, I've just caught new things every time.
Yeah, me too.
It's really cool. It was a really fun movie to watch in theaters, and it's a really fun movie to watch just in general.
I'm going to use this as an excuse to cue future Oscar to put a clip in now.
Do you like to gamble?
Oh, I certainly do.
Do you ever play roulette?
On occasion.
Well, let me give you a word of advice.
I'm all ears.
When playing roulette...
Yes?
Always bet on black.
Batman! What are you doing? You're completely outnumbered here. Are you nuts?
You want to get nuts? Come on. Let's get nuts. Because I just wrote a song about how I'm going to kick all your butts.
Stop him before he starts singing!
In the darkest night... Overcompensate, but I'm the best of them all.
I'm on my way, sir.
Who has the coolest gadgets? Who has the tricked out ride? Who does the sickest backflips?
Because that shows.
Right.
It's funny ass clips.
No, and then this is going to be a great movie to just be like, Leo, you want to watch the Lego Batman movie again? Okay. You know?
Not a bad problem.
Not a bad problem.
Better than The Boss Baby.
I bet. Oh, yeah. So I can't say.
I'm sure, anyway. So that is my number 6, which is Rob's number 9.
Correct.
And we're on to, where are we now?
That was your number 6. So
we're on
my
to
number
Rob's
6.
Number 6. Rob's number 6.
My number 6, we'll have to wait because it is on somebody else's
list. It is on one other person's list.
If you notice the trend here, I will be waiting a long time. You guys were waiting for all of my movies?
Yeah, that's true. We clearly rated our movies higher than yours.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, well, finally, I could talk about my number 6.
Which is Rob's number 7.
Number 7, yeah.
Nice. Okay, which you guys talk it up.
Well, this is Logan.
I hurt myself today.
It's still one of the best. I think the best movie trailers of last year.
I 100,000% agree with you.
Johnny Cash's song.
That song must have been replaying in my on my headphones for like 2 months. It was great.
But no, I mean, okay, back to the movie. It's pretty much the best out of all the Wolverine movies by far.
For sure.
It brings like the sadness factor right into it right at the very end because you know what's going to happen.
Oh, punches you in the dick.
They were cutting fucking onions in that theater, I swear to God.
Yeah, no, I mean, it felt like they
punching
were
punching puppies.
It did feel like that. It did feel 100% agree with you.
Yeah, it's such a goddamn shame that this has to be the last one, so. But,
it's not actually the last one, though. You know that.
Well, right. But in the timeline of, you know. Yeah.
Well, the last one for the director. Because he wanted to give a Western finality to Logan, which is his favorite. The director, who's James Mangold, who's famous for doing. Actually, he did Walk the Line, I think, which is a Johnny Cash biopic.
Yeah, that's funny.
Biopic.
Maybe that's why he got the.
He probably, yeah. Anyway, he's always been inspired by Logan. He wanted to do. He did this in the Wolverine. So he wanted to do a Wolverine for a samurai epic, and he wanted to do a Western with him. But that's it. That's it for him, though. So. We probably won't get anything cool like this anymore.
Right. Yeah.
You were saying, Luke? Or you want me to step in?
Sorry, I didn't mean to step in. I know you guys are reviewing. Okay. I didn't put it in my top 10. I was just like giving you a fact. That's all.
All right.
Sure.
Well, no, I mean, this movie takes place in kind of the future, 2029? And, you know, Logan's pretty much old and fucking you got Professor X and he's just like super, super old, and you got these two powerful characters, and they're just like in such a weakened state. It kind of makes me feel sad for that. And that was one of the things that really, you know, got me, is just like these people that, you know, I hold it to such, like, a, such high regard in the comics and the movies, you know, seeing them towards their final days, it's horrible.
Yeah,
it is a pretty hard R.
Yeah,
in terms of all the freaking violence, which is amazing.
And then I think I know that Logan, it's the first superhero that's really hard R. I know Deadpool was one too, but that one was fun.
That was fun. This is not it. This is more dramatic and
And I always thought that Wolverine deserved a hard R because it's claws. Like, he invites rage and blood, unfortunately.
Sure. So no, I agree. I think what the movie does really well also is why it made my number 7 is that you see these almost used to be perfect, like, people, right? Or we saw them at their highest points, and we're watching them close to their lowest, if not to at least their end. And they're struggling, and they're just like everybody else. And it's a big theme with the mutant movies, the X-Men movies, where they're human too. Like, they're just because they have abilities, they're just as human as we are, though, emotionally. Just not ability-wise.
Right.
Logan specifically, because Logan, I love that. Technically, throughout his movies, in the Wolverine movies, we've seen his theoretical birth all the way to his death, right? In all the movies that we had for Wolverine, and he's lived a long, long life.
Too long,
right? Exactly.
Peace
and
is nice.
I mean, like, he doesn't even want to deal with after things, but it's the fact that the type of person he is that he can never let that go. And that's the one thing that's always driven him. It's that type of person. And the fact that he's been losing that for the longest. And he has to find that. And through the main character, through that the one that's created by him, the little girl. It's a great movie. It's a super tearjerker. It is hard R, but at the same time, it's definitely something that the character deserved. And I think I was really glad that this movie came out. It was just a really good movie to watch.
Just for you guys know, if you want to listen to a full review of that film, Logan, we reviewed it on episode 18, which is, I think, the first show we did in 2017.
Oh, wow.
Oh, it came out then.
Because we did that coupled with the Oscars. Because it came out in February, I think.
Yeah, it did come out early in the year.
So that is your number 6, Luke, which is your number 7, Roth. Mm-hmm. And we're on to my number... Is it my number 6? No, my number 5.
5, sorry. Yeah.
My number 5 is a standalone. Nice.
Yeah. Because I didn't see this one.
I saw it.
Oh, you haven't seen it?
No, never got a chance.
I bought the Blu-ray. It just came out recently.
Well, ship it over.
Yeah, I have to rewatch this movie.
Gladly, even.
This is a horrible mention for me.
Is there an iTunes thing? Because I can just log into your iTunes.
I haven't looked at it that closely. I'll find out. If there is, I'll gladly tell you.
It's on the box.
No, it says a digital copy, but I don't know if it's iTunes. That's what I'm saying.
Movies anywhere, bro.
Voodoo's fine.
Okay, Voodoo's fine. Okay, it's not important right now, guys. what number? I'm confused. My number 5, sorry. My number 5 movie is Blade Runner 2049. And this is 30 years after the events of the first film. A new Blade Runner, LAPD Officer K, which is played by Ryan Gosling, unearths a long-buried secret that has the potential to plunge what's left of society into chaos. Kay's discovery leads him on a quest to find Rick Deckard, Harrison Ford, a former LAPD Blade Runner who has been missing for 30 motherfucking years. And this is the follow-up to Denis Villeneuve's amazing film that got, you know, a best nominated for Best Picture and all that stuff last year, Arrival, which with... what's her name? Amy Adams?
Amy Adams and Jeremy Renner.
Jeremy Renner, thank you. Yes, thank you.
Aliens, guys, come on.
And this film has so much going for it. Blade Runner is, you know how I mentioned The Lost City is a beautiful film and all that? It is, you know, like my number one, my number two or three. The reason it isn't is because my number one beautiful film is Blade Runner for 2049. It is, I mean, that's just because it's Roger Deakins, but let's face it, it's because it's Roger Deakins.
I mean, I think the beginning of the movie is shot beautifully, especially when
there's the red and then the water at the scene at the end, and then the sand of Las Vegas. Everything is kind of perfect in this movie. There's that scene with the digital, like, holographic Elvis showing up on the thing.
Sure, yeah.
Beautiful scenes going on in this movie. And Denis Villeneuve is a very, you know, methodical director in many ways. He does great things with mood and setting and atmosphere, as we saw in Enemy, for example. That's a big one. Sicario, which is a big favorite of mine.
Ooh, Sicario 2's coming out.
I saw the trailer. It looks... I'll watch it, but it's not Denis Villeneuve. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, it's not?
No, I don't think so. Okay. Anyway, but Blade Runner is on top of... So, I've never been a big fan of the original. Not that we're going to get into that right now, but...
Oh, I never saw that either.
What? Really?
Yeah.
That's okay. It's okay. You're not
missing. I was hoping Blade Runner 2049 was going to be like my entry to it. Like, I was going to watch the first one, and then this, another came to fruition.
Oh, nice. Well, the Blade Runner Final Cut, I think it's on HBO. Might be still there. That's where I saw it last time.
All right. Good to know.
It doesn't matter. But this remake, whatever it's called, it's what's amazing about it is that it introduces different variations on the philosophical sci-fi elements of the original Blade Runner, which is, you know, these AIs, you know, are they human if they think they are, and all this stuff. That's the original. This one already tells you what these things are. It's not longer a mystery of who's a Blade Runner, who isn't. The question goes deeper into their significance, if they have, like, things like a soul. They don't ask you that directly in the movie, but they ask you that by having these machines who are most of the time the main actors on screen ask themselves those questions and ponder through this life, even if it's through circuits, if it's valuable or not. And I think that coupled with a lot of the world building, which the world building might be my favorite thing of this year in movies, is Blade Runners. There's a few others that are really good too, but this one is so methodical. It's so specific. It feels like the future would have been if the future came from the 80s. Like, because Blade Runner, the original, has Atari everywhere, right? Because it was a big thing back then.
Yeah, yeah.
Has Atari as the main competition and corporation. This one has, what would that look like from that point? Not with the point of iPhones or anything like that.
Yeah. I really enjoy that. I love that. Just,
the touches on that is amazing. And the acting is also truly great, and which goes along with the casting. I think Harrison Ford actually gave a shit in this movie, which is also, thank God. Because I never know with him, you know. He's just so, like, famous. He can do whatever he wants. So I'm kind of glad he didn't call it in or phone it in.
Yeah.
And the Ryan Gosling was also perfect casting because he looks like a robot already.
Yeah. I do love that. Right. That is true, though. I do love that Ryan Gosling was the whole time. He was like, I'm being pranked. Like, I filmed this movie. I'm until it comes out in theaters or whatever, I believe I just got pranked the whole time.
Yeah.
But they paid me for it, so it is what it is.
It's probably so easy for him. He wakes up that way. He wakes up like a robot. He boots up like a robot.
Right, exactly.
And the actors, I don't have the thing information right now, but the actors who play the holographic girlfriend, which is like another level, like a robot having a robot, a different program as a girlfriend.
It was like a her moment.
Yeah, it was very her moment. Yeah. That her scene was amazing. And then the whole billboard incident with the big giant version of her.
Yeah, like I said, I wanted to rewatch this movie.
Yeah, it's worth rewatching.
But yeah, it's an honorable mention for me for sure. And cool. I definitely wanted to put it somewhere.
So that is my number five. Blade Runner 2049. It's out on Blu-ray and digital copy or rental or whatever. So check it out. Ruff, what is your number
five? I think I have a unique one for once, guys.
Oh, do you really?
My number five.
Yeah, he does.
Shit.
That's the first number. That's the only one he has.
I think so.
That's unique?
Yeah.
Damn.
Fucking copycats. No, you're the copycat.
But you guys are a bunch of copycats.
I have two originals already.
Ralph, to be fair, that one was really close to being on my list.
No. Me too. It was my number 11.
Suck. Anyways, my number five is a movie that came out in the summer. And it was with the badass Charlize Theron as Atomic Blonde.
Being fucking badass. I mean,
it was probably... It is probably one of my favorite spy movies that I've ever seen. And I've seen quite a few. It's like spy levels on top of spy levels on top of spy levels with a lot of action.
Oh, shit.
A lot of sex. A lot of everything. And it's... it's really cool. It takes place in during the Cold War in Berlin, right?
Yeah, East Berlin.
East Berlin. Correct. This is directed by David Lake,
I think.
Sure.
Before you go any further, I forgot to mention that we reviewed Blade Runner at episode 34 and Atomic Blonde at episode 30. Just so you know, if you want to check out four reviews of those.
Correct.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think this also stars James McAvoy, John Goodman. It's like random. Everybody else, there's about bigger characters, but I would say those are definitely the two bigger ones. And then, I don't know. I just really had a great time with this movie because we're walking in with the littlest information. And is what's our main character's walking in with. So everything we're experiencing is through her. Yeah. And then that's what in theory you think you're experiencing. But like, if you follow everything right and you can stick along with things and you can kind of like, you know, figure things out, you can totally tell exactly where everything's going. But like, the movie does a good job of flip-flopping and getting you confused and making this a great spy movie that you don't know what kind of level we're in, because it's just there's so many things going on. And it was a really fun movie to watch. It was great dialogue with all the codes and stuff going on. Mm-hmm. And especially when
the neon spray painting.
Yeah, I mean, cool. The visuals of this movie is really great. Everything's dark and bleak, but it was huge flashes of like of what's called of great color. And then this one great fight scene that apparently people love doing in hallways or staircases, because that's like a big thing to do apparently.
But it's really good.
It was a really good fight
scene. So I saw this movie again recently, and I almost made my top 10. Like, oh, I have to. And
right. It felt like you feel for her. You almost like out of breath when she's out of breath, because she's just like, what? Because you just held your breath the whole time because you're like, what's going on?
Right.
But she just did all the work. Right. Like, yeah.
It's a lady bond. Really, it's a perfect lady bond, like girl bond. Yeah.
100% agree with you. And sucks that you guys.
I feel very ashamed that I don't
have it. It sucks that I couldn't make you guys' top 10.
Shame,
but,
Oscar.
Know, at the same time.
Fuck you, you too.
At the same time, I'm glad I had it on my top 10 so I could talk about it.
Yes, I'm also glad for that. You guys have a bunch of things on your top 10 that I wish was on mine, so I'm glad we can talk about it today, guys. At least there's that.
Yeah, that's true.
So, Ralph, that was your number 5, Atomic Blonde. Luke's number 5 we can finally talk about. This is our first one that comes with all three of us, I think, right?
Oh, yeah. It's your number 7.
And it's Ralph's number 8.
Yeah.
Correct.
So, Luke, start it off. What is your number 5?
My number 5 is going to be Baby Driver.
Yeah.
The one movie I couldn't see while I was up in Alaska, and I bought it. And I was like, I can't wait to get back to Chicago so I could finally watch it.
Yeah, that's right. We reviewed this on episode 27, by the way.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, I don't think I was on that one anyways.
Yeah, we don't care.
It was a halfway point show, too.
It was our halfway point show, yeah. We actually had it on our top. You didn't, Luke?
I didn't count it as mine, but you did count it. You had it,
I had it on mine, and I was like, we'll talk about it in the review.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just an amazing like movie, especially with the whole the music and the choreography along with it. Is just one of the things that I really love. So I'm a big fan of music.
Not shocking.
Shut up.
If anybody knows
you. Oh, yeah, you have to know him. He's a metalhead, guys.
Right, but here's the thing. Like, at first, when I saw the trailers for this movie, I was like, I really want to see it. But I didn't hear much about it until after, you know, the whole South by Southwest thing, where it got a lot of hype. So I thought it was going to be kind of a flop. But I'm really glad that Edgar Wright pulled this off.
Dude, I'm in that wheelhouse. So this movie, my number 7, by the way, it is a music video of action. And I don't mean action like car chases or anything. That too. But I mean an action of like with the way everyone moves around the main character, with the way he puts music, what he's listening to music all the time. Babies listen to music. How he walks from here to the corner. How he reacts to his boss telling him the thing. Like everything is so choreographed perfectly that the action on top of that also being choreographed so fucking perfectly, it feels like the music made the movie. Yeah. It doesn't feel like it's like edited to it.
I 100% agreed.
So
what I really like also is that I feel like movies do this to fit, like they'll put a song specifically timing to fit a song or certain thing, and then it finishes. But in reality, it's not there. And this movie, no. He, Baby, the actual the character in the movie, does it to fit his real life.
Yeah.
Like, he'll play a song, he knows it takes him the length of whatever to get from here to there.
Yeah.
And that's exactly the
he'll
time
he'll buy some coffee this. With the rhythm of a song.
Exactly. Like,
not to life or whatever.
Right, exactly. Whatever he knows the type of song he needs to play for what exactly he's going to be doing at that time.
And this movie has, hands down, my favorite opening of any movie this year.
Okay.
Of 2017. The opening car chase sequence. Dude, it's almost a pity that it doesn't reach those levels anymore, but it's so good.
Yeah, great casting, by the way.
Great casting. Also,
did you watch the music video?
No.
Because the whole inspiration for the movie was actually from a music video from like a 1994 song. That pretty much, and they mimicked the entire like beginning from that music video.
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, it's called Bell Bottoms by the... John Spencer Blues Explosion.
That's the name of the song, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I knew the name of the song, I guess. I just never seen that video.
Interesting.
Maybe I'll check that out.
I'll see that out, yeah.
But, man, the craft is amazing. That opening is such a wow.
It's amazing, yeah.
Yeah. Raph, you're the one who hasn't talked much about it yet, so.
I don't know what else to really say. There's really good action scenes. But what I really like about the movie is that the constant, obviously, is Baby. In the movie with all the stuff that's going on with all the different groups, and I just love how he's always doing these different heists or these different things going on for because he's the getaway driver, and everything he's a guy who's doesn't want to be there, but he's so good at it, the job, that he's obviously being forced to be there. And it fits really well because he looks like a guy who just doesn't give a fuck, and you almost feel like there's like that guy everywhere at work, with a guy, but he's just so good at his job. Like, he's like, why is it easy for him, right? And I think the character, just for Baby himself, the type of person he is, in the movie, fits really well for the position, for what he's doing in his position. He almost has like this, oh, I'm just. Okay, I just do this for a living. Like, it is what it is. It's all good, and I'm good at it, and I like driving. So there's what's the downside to this, you know? It's I don't know. It's really cool.
Definitely. I love this movie. I'm glad that Luke finally saw it and put it on his list because I was worried.
Sure. Oh yeah,
but we're all big Edgar Wright fans.
Edgar Wright fans. Yeah.
Also, the man can do no wrong.
Yeah, it's really hard for him to do wrong. To say yeah. So far, all his movies have been hits for me. And they get better with age, too, a lot of them. I want to say real quick, this is Edgar Wright's first actual Hollywood break, meaning that his movie actually made it to theaters for longer than a week. It was actually out there for longer than most films.
Yeah.
Because it made very good money for a low-budget, a mid-budget-tier movie.
Yeah, yeah. And, what I think that just did well was that, it was, like I said, it was really good casting. You have Jamie Foxx
and also, I think it made the top 10 or 15 blockbuster hits of the year.
I think so, yeah.
And it's the only one that's original.
Yeah.
I believe. Yeah. They're not a remake. They're not
right.
Marvel.
That's another thing about Edgar Wright is it's original. It's all original work. Yeah. No, you have Jamie Foxx in it. You have...
John Hamm.
John Hamm.
Man, he got that fast. Luke was on top of that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, he was.
As Kevin Spacey before the controversy, but yes.
Yeah, and Kevin Spacey, exactly.
Right. He was billable.
So, I think it's great casting. And then you
very
have
good.
Two nobodies who are main actors.
Right. Yeah, which, I mean, not known actor. I mean, I know the kid. I've seen him in one other thing.
Yeah, but I mean,
yeah,
lower tier actor.
Right.
Not lower tier, but just lower.
Yeah, no, he's definitely unknown. No.
Yeah. There you go.
So Baby Driver made all our three lists. That was Luke's number 5, my number 7, Roth's number 8. All right. Let us carry on here with my turn, right? My number 4
OG.
Is another original. It is a film that I don't think anyone's seen here. It's called Lady Bird.
No.
Luke, have you seen it yet?
Actually, I was going to see that movie, but it was the show times were along the Palm Springs Film Festival, so I couldn't see it. But I think they're still showing it around here.
I'll just start talking about this movie.
He's on?
Okay, cool. Lady Bird, let me read the description here. Christine Lady Bird McPherson is a high school senior from the wrong side of the tracks, quite literally, by the way. She longs for adventure, sophistication, and opportunity, but finds none of that in her Sacramento Catholic high school. Lady Bird follows her senior year in high school, including her first romance, her participation in school play, and most important, her applying for college. It is, in more than one way, It is a coming-of-age movie. But it is made so amazingly personalized. Personal. It feels personal to me. And by all the accounts and coming up from the movie, it is actually quite personal. Anyway, it does all of that, including being very real, very nostalgically in a way, because it's based, it's set in 2003, I believe. And it handles its character so tenderly, and with more characters going around her as opposed to just Lady Bird, and treats her so realistically, I think, that it transcends, I think, any coming-of-age movie that's come out in the last few years. And so I recommend it for that alone, on top of the fact that, you know, I kind of like the fact that it's nominated for Best Picture and Best Director, Greta Gerwig.
And actress.
And actress, Saoirse Ronan. And Laurie Metcalf, who is from
Roseanne.
Roseanne Ruff, so, who plays Aunt, what's her name? Aunt.
Yeah. What? Aunt what?
The crazy aunt.
What's her name? From Roseanne? Aunt
yeah,
what?
I forget, man.
Do you remember, Luke?
I'm looking it up.
Oh, you look. Oh, no, that's cheating.
I yeah, that's cheating.
Through, who cares?
Oh, well.
Well, that's the whole point. That's what we ask. Anyway, okay.
Roseanne, guys. Roseanne.
Roseanne, guys. Watch Roseanne. Kids, ask your parents. Yeah.
Which, by the way.
No, they're rebooting it. Not rebooting, but making a new season.
Okay. Really? Oh. Like
yeah.
Gilmore Girls?
Didn't she date. What's that famous actor?
Who? Roseanne?
Yeah, no. The aunt in the show.
She dated, you mean someone, she dated, who, you're asking about someone she dated in the show
yeah,
or in
yeah.
real life?
Yeah, no, in the show.
I don't know, someone famous?
Already.
Oh, George Clooney?
George Clooney, there you go.
Yeah, in the first, dated like once or twice.
Sure.
And they were clearly that was our best coupling too, by the way.
Her name was Jackie.
Jackie.
How do we forget that?
I don't know how we did. We grew up on Roseanne, guys. So anyway, Lady Bird is, it's a great, it's a greatly directed and greatly written film about this girl trying to figure herself out in a world where she is trying to fit in while looking cool, like she's not trying to fit in. And that's saying a lot, and it's touched on in so many different subtle ways, from a great moment that's so personal to her but so awe-inspiring for the people watching the movie, because, you know, we understand what's going on in the scene. You know, liking a song on the radio that everyone else hates, for example. I know it doesn't mean much if you guys don't see it. Just watch it and you know what I mean. And I guess me being exactly also a senior in high school in 2003 maybe hit closer to home than I thought it would. I'm not from Sacramento, and I'm not a girl, but I understood a lot of the stuff
close
I was
enough.
Going through. Yeah, pretty close enough, though. Anyway, it just hit me home really well. And I almost don't want to say too much without really spoiling it, but how can you spoil life this way? I'll tell you this, though. The opening is that the main thing about this movie, on top of everything else, is that her relationship with her mother, Laurie Metcalf, as you can imagine, she's a little nutty. And nutty in a way where how they drive each other crazy, not that she's a bad person. And they drive each other so crazy that in the opening, which shows how they can relate to each other very well as human beings, as mother and daughter, and then the next scene, while they're driving in a car, she drives her so crazy that she just jumps out of the car, moving car, and gets, you know, hospitalized in her arm instead of her, like, spraying in it or something. And, like, which shows a lot of the characterization as it progresses. And the whole airport scene at the end, so perfect, too. This movie's great. Lady Bird, it's my number 4, if I'm not mistaken.
You are right.
Yes. So we're on to your number 4, Ralph.
My number 4 is Luke's
my number 7.
7, okay. What episode was this on?
37.
That I was not part of the review, but I wanted to watch the movie.
That's right. Luke and I reviewed it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
yeah. This is Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. I got to watch this just recently, and I love the fucking characters in it. I'll read a quick synopsis. A mother personally challenges the local authorities to solve her daughter's murder when they fail to catch the culprit. This is directed and written by Martin McDonagh, and starring Frances McDormand, Woody Harrelson, Sam Rockwell, Caleb Landry-Jones, and more people.
Peter Dinklage.
And more.
Peter Dinklage.
I mean, yes. Yeah. He's definitely support.
Sure. We have a lot of nominees here. I'll tell you that right now for Oscars in this movie.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And what I really liked about this movie is I liked it, I hated it when I first saw it, but I liked it afterwards. Like, it was a like and a hate situation.
a lot of people are going through with this movie.
How everyone feels like they know each other. They talk to each other like they're almost like family. To an extent of family, like, I can say whatever I want to you, kind of relate. And no one really gets offended by it because they know that, okay, you're just having either a bad day or whatever. Or you're, you know, having a bad whatever. And, but I'm going to dish it out right back to you. Like, it's the weird relationship that everybody has in this town. And I'm assuming it's the South in general. I don't know how
Missouri.
Far.
Missouri is not really South.
It's Southern for me.
okay.
So,
yeah, right, I guess.
Yeah. But I mean, I like what our Frances McDormand with Mildred. Yeah, is it?
Mildred right?
What Mildred does to like post these billboards that no one's used in forever to make a statement. And, you know, it's like, what wouldn't you do if you lost a child and you wanted answers? Like,
right.
You got to do something.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. And it's this weird thing where everyone, I love how human, how non just like character books or whatever, like all these people are acting, they all have their own problems. They all have, and they're dealing with everything that's coming at them in their own ways. And they obviously have to deal with each other, and they deal with each other in their own ways as well. But like they understand each other at the same time. It's a really weird connection, and all these connections that these guys have, I really, really love. Though there's obvious growth, and there's obvious like downfalls to a lot of the characters. Our main three characters, which I think there is a strictly main three characters here, and you. I don't know. It's a really, really kind of powerful movie to see. Like, I've acted in some of these ways where I just blurt out or I, you know, whatever. And I know I should be doing things better, but it's hard, and it's a really interesting relationships that everybody has in this movie. I don't want to spoil things, even though I know
you. I can tell you you're talking way around it.
Yeah, I am talking my way around it.
Yeah.
But it's because this is a really good movie.
Yeah, it's not on VOD yet. But
no, it's not out. Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's why that's what I'm talking around it.
It's in that gray area.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But I don't know. Like I said, the acting is done really well. There's a lot of dark shit. I mean, from moment
yeah.
from the beginning of the movie, it's dark, and like the realizations you come into it, of like how fucking close her daughter was to the house. For what's it called? For when the murder happened. I mean, there's a lot of really dark stuff that's in this movie. And when you see realization, when you see certain things come to light for us, like you kind of realize, like, oh, I mean, why? Yeah, you realize why certain people act certain ways, and it makes sense. It makes perfect sense. But yeah, I mean, Woody Harrelson's character is fucking whoa, like. I did not see that coming.
Yeah.
I mean, it was bonkers. But yeah. Luke, what did you think?
Well, you kind of nailed on everything. So, but aside from, I'm really glad Sam Rockwell's getting some recognition from this, because I do think he's very underplayed in a lot of his movies. And I think he's kind of getting more recognition from this one.
I didn't know he was nominated.
Yeah, he's nominated
for
supporting.
Yes, they're
both nominated for supporting.
And Woody. Nice. I didn't see that. Sorry.
Yeah, this is going to be a good movie. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm totally down for that. Yeah.
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 I do love the dark humor in this movie as well, though. Because, I mean, honestly, it's from the man who made In Bruges, which is one of my favorite movies of all time.
All-time favorites for me, too. I watch that movie every year.
Yeah.
But it definitely holds up. That's the only reason I went to see this movie was because, it's the same guy.
Yeah, that's the only reason I saw it, too. And Seven Psychopaths, too, he did that.
Yeah, I don't know if I saw that one.
That you was with Sam Rockwell, wasn't it?
Also, yes. Yeah. And, my God. The Deer Hunter guy. It doesn't matter.
That's helpful.
Christopher Walken.
There's a lot of people in Deer Hunter.
Yeah, there's a lot of people. I picked the worst movie.
You picked the worst movie.
I could have said True Romance, but there's a shit ton of people in that movie, too.
There's a fuck ton of people.
Yeah, but no one really remembers that many people. It's like, Brad Pitt on the couch.
Yeah. People do say that.
Like you. Like,
people
you just said it.
You just said it. Anyway. That's three billboards outside of Ebbing, Missouri. Anything else you guys want to say before we move on to the next one?
No.
Okay, so making sure. I want to make sure everyone gets their due. So that's Luke's number 7, Ralph's number 4. What is your number 4, Luke, an original?
Yes, another original for me. This is an anime called A Silent Voice. Now, we all know like that for 2017, Your Name was like the biggest movie in Japan. Well, this is like the number 2 movie. Had Your Name not came out, this would have been it.
Right.
Pretty much, it's right from the get-go, it gets your attention because it's about this kid, Shoya Ishida. And in the first 5 minutes of the film, he's about to kill himself. But at the last minute, he snaps out of it, reevaluates his life, and kind of sees where he went wrong. And you can kind of see when he was a kid, he was like this like childhood bully to this one girl who was deaf, and he would like break her like hearing aid and all that shit. And eventually, everyone kind of turned on him, you know, for being the bully. And then like he's become like this loner and outcast, and kind of his life went downhill from there. But then he tries to like make amends, and you know.
Yeah, very tough subject matter. I also saw
very, very tough.
Very tough to also like for the movie to try to like put in perspective, you know.
Mm-hmm. Especially with a lot of the sign language that they have to like use, and they kind of have to introduce like the viewer into kind of recognizing what these small signs are.
Yeah. So Luke, you remember you gave me this copy of the movie, and you gave me the like bad subtitle. You told me to find new ones or better ones, and I couldn't find one. So I ended up seeing it with those. It was very hard, but I was still able to discern.
I could have probably given like sent them to you or anything.
It's okay, but I did see them with those subtitles. It was funny though watching it.
Yeah, but no, I mean, after I watched this movie, because it's actually based off a manga by the same name. Crunchyroll has the entire manga, so I think when the 2 days after I watched it, I read the entire manga, which is pretty much follows the entire movie through, except there's a, like additional like thing where there's like a movie like a filmmaking contest that they're also a part in that kind of like makes nice. Them kind of stick together.
That's awesome. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
I might have to read it.
That's very rare when an anime wants you to make or an anime movie or whatever makes you want to read the manga.
Yeah.
It is kind of rare.
It's
right.
The same thing with like watching a movie and you're like, I gotta read that book.
Right.
It's rare. It's not as common. Right. That means that that's a good thing that might actually make me watch this movie.
Right. Yeah. I recommend it too. It's really good. Like I said, fucked up. Hard to watch sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. And apparently this is one of the Oscar snubs for, you know, the animated feature. We'll probably talk about that on a different show.
Yeah, because I have to put Boss Baby in. Sorry.
Fuckers.
I'm already talking about it. You're right, we shouldn't. Silent Voice, though, super recommended. It is...
It did get a limited release in like October 2017, but I mean super limited in the United States, but...
Yeah, it was.
It is what it is.
Yeah.
All right, so Luke, what number was that of yours?
It was 4.
Yeah, number 4. So
number 4.
We're at number 2, number 3. Top 3s, guys.
My number 3 will have to wait.
Again.
Because Shocker. That's how close it is. Close. It's close, guys, to somebody else's list. But that's not my number 3. It's a blank one for now. Raph, what is your number 3?
Not shocking in my apparently pickings, as everybody had to pickings. Pick whatever I chose. We'll have to wait.
Yes, we will. Goddamn better.
Luke has an original, though.
He does, does he? Yes, he does. Luke, we're back to you again.
I know, another, Jesus.
Which is not shocking, but go ahead, Luke.
No, not shocking at all.
Well, you know, normally I start the year off when this movie is already in my top number 1 slot, but unfortunately it didn't make it there.
I'm surprised number 2 beat it. Oh, we'll get to it, but anyway.
I know.
Okay. What's your number 3?
Star Wars, The Last Jedi.
I thought it was The Final Jedi, no?
No, The Last Jedi. Directed by our favorite Rian Johnson.
Yes, totally favorite. I love him.
And apparently this one was really close to making your top 10, right, Oscar?
Very close. It wasn't my I was on my number 7 for like a good month until very recently.
Yeah, I'm in the camp where I like this movie less than you guys do. Don't get me wrong. Don't hate the movie. Just, yeah.
I understand.
All right, so continuing the whole Star Wars epic saga and, you know, in the third, you know, set of sequel trilogies. I mean this just takes where do I start? It's just so good. I liked it so much, and I don't know what people hate about it. Oh, I know what they think they don't like about it, but fucking they're wrong. I mean, I loved it. Like, Mark Hamill, back as Luke Skywalker, the, you know, relentlessness of training the next set of Jedi, and, like, you know, you kind of see the whole backstory with Kylo Ren and how he became Kylo Ren, and, you know, how he feels Luke Skywalker betrayed him, and, you know, he feels the same way. It's crazy.
Dude, okay, thank you. You put it on your list. I knew you were going to put it on your list, so maybe that's why I was kind of that was like, oh, I don't have to put it on mine. I know we'll talk about it. But, man, this movie is also top contenders for the most beautiful, choreographed. I think my favorite fight sequence of any movie was, you know, during the Red Room fight sequence.
Oh, yes.
So good. Yeah, love it. Anything else you want to mention before we continue? Because I can't say much more because...
I mean, we did talk about this movie. It was very long, recent. Well, episode 39.
What episode? Nice.
39,
nice.
Yeah.
It was the last one of the year. Last show we did in December.
Oh, yeah, right before I left. Yes,
that is true. Right. I remember, I made sure you made sure you were sticking around. Yes. Right. But so, yeah,
I mean,
awesome.
I even love, like, the side plots. You know, I mean, Rey, she's still amazing. I can't wait to see what's going to happen to her in the next movie. Same with Poe. What was the other guy's name? Why am I trying names?
Have you been hearing about
Finn? Finn, yes. And also BB-8.
Yeah.
I think it's Babate.
Yeah.
But also, you know, we had that awesome scene with Carrie Fisher where we thought, like, oh my god, this is how they're going to kill her off, but nope.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, one of those nice head fakes.
Have you guys heard about, like, articles about... what's his name? Poe being the actual bad guy in the movie? Let's see.
Because he caused the most damage?
Yeah,
I know. It's kind of like, you know, when you think of Harrison Ford and the first Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, sorry, mm-hmm. Can't believe I was spacing out on that title, how he was, if he wasn't involved at all in it, he wouldn't have any trouble. Like, the Nazis would still die at the end, remember?
Yes.
Kind of like that. Like,
the Big Bang Theory thing, yeah.
Right. Is that from there?
I just saw that episode.
Nice. Oh, yeah. So that's your number three, Luke. Star Wars. Three. The Last Jedi. Ryan
Johnson.
Hoping
that episode 9 will be my number one for 2019.
Let's hope. You probably will. Well, we'll see.
Probably
might. Yeah.
Middle movie syndrome.
Right. So we're on to my number two. My number two is something we can talk about, Roth. It's a movie you and I share. My number two is The Shape of Water.
Which is my number three.
Which is your number three, which you just skipped, right?
Which so, I still haven't seen.
Oh, you haven't seen it yet, right?
Nope.
This is so up your alley. Is it? Would you say it's up his alley, Roth?
I think in the next 2 days I'm going to see it, so...
Would you say, Ruff, is really like it's something Luke would love or like?
I think he'll like it.
Okay. All right. Let me read the description here.
By all means, take it away.
Yes. The Shape of Water. Wow. No, I'm not going to read that one. At a top secret research facility in the 1950s, a lonely janitor forms a unique relationship with an amphibious creature that is being held in captivity. And this movie, on top of being nominated for every fucking nomination out there, it is, you know, written and directed by Guillermo del Toro and starring Sally Hawkins, Michael Shannon, Octavia Spencer, Doug Jones, and who's that other actor I really want to mention? Richard Jenkins, who is fucking always great.
Wasn't Emmys what? Already happened or whatever? Didn't he win an Emmy or something?
Me might have. I don't know. I didn't watch
something.
The Emmys.
I don't know. He won something already. And all I heard was that he said it was about time or something.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah.
I mean, it's about time.
Yeah.
Sure. The guy's been on everything for a long time.
Yeah.
All right. So, I love this movie. I was my top three, and I haven't mentioned my third one because we're saving that, but this is my number two. But my top three, I feel like they're all my number one. So, like, they're just so, they were fighting with me the whole time until today. And I finally just made a decision, right? So it's my number two in the end. And it is such a wonderfully realized film that is aesthetically pleasing and aesthetically much like a live-action version of Bioshock, which is what I said to you in the review. By the way, Roth and I reviewed this for bonus for December. So if you didn't donate, obviously you didn't get the episode in December, but you'll get it 5 months down and you'll hear our full review then.
Yep.
But it is... well, what do you think of the movie, Ruff?
I thought it was great. I mean, I don't know what you want
me to say. It's like an adult fairy tale.
Yeah, for sure. That is, I would definitely say that. Yeah, there's definitely, what's it called? As we said in the other review, was hints of Pan's Labyrinth in here, of from his storytelling. Mm-hmm. What I really enjoy about this movie is just Guillermo del Toro's world building. I just think he manages to make a world where everything is believable. Like, everything that's in this, that's happening in this movie, mm-hmm. is believable, not just to our characters, not just to this one little thing, but to the world that we're in. And that's yeah. that's something that he does really well.
And even in Michael Shannon, who is a villain of the film, a clear villain too, he is both an amalgamation not only of the white man, you know, ruling society at that age and decade, but he is the embodiment of that decade in the worst ways, though, not in the best ways.
Yeah, in the worst ways.
He's not the American dream. He is the guy who is seeking it so hard that he's the bad guy. He is missing out on the actual important things.
He's missing out on the values of what the American dream
is. And somewhere
be.
Along the way, he is just this incorrigible asshole who cannot accept anything that isn't white and pure like him.
Right, exactly.
And yes, I do mean that in every way possible. Yeah. He is gross in lines of dialogue. It's not even the violence he produces. He is, the way he thinks is pretty fucked up.
Yeah. And, although I do like that one line where he says, what's it called? There's two types of men. There's the men who wash their hands after they use the bathroom, or who you wash their hands before they use the bathroom. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, it's so weird.
Like, and it tells you like where they stand, but when they go piss. Like,
yeah, when they go piss. Yeah. Not to poop.
Yeah, not to poop.
I imagine. Anyway, it's a
really weird scene.
Right, and then when he like almost like physically starts sexually harassment going on there a little bit.
Yeah,
in that scene. Anyway, this movie's great. And obviously, the amphibious man, who is very close to Abe Sapien.
Yeah.
He is most of that's prosthetics, by the way. Very little CGI on that thing. And the guy does play the Sapien in the movies, too.
Listen, you already got a guy who could do it, right?
No, but the love making, because this is a romance in the core of it. It's like a reverse Little Mermaid, where it's a merman. It's a little merman.
What's really interesting is that I got hoodwinked in the movie, like, and I shouldn't have.
Yeah.
I should have seen it, like,
right, because the opening kind of tells you.
It really does, and right. I was just like, come on, like, how did I, like, and friend of the show, Matt, also, like, he came out of the movie really enjoying this movie. It was, I don't know, it's. It is a fairy tale, a reverse Little Mermaid, if you want to call it that way. Also,
a little bit, not like a lot. But.
No, I know what you meant though. But it is this like adult fairy tale, we're not dependent on like the girl being saved or something crazy like that.
Nah, man, she has her own agency. She builds up her own confidence.
Just the opposite. Yeah, it's
wonderful, and the way they treat her as real as. As any, there's no fakery in the movie, from the nudity aspect to the racial profiling to right, her partner. Exactly. So like it treats everything on the same level. Yeah. So like the movie they'll show you the chewed up fingers, right, of the bloody violence, but at the same time they'll show you the nudity full on and everything. Right. Yeah. Everything is shown on that same level of adult. Of maturity.
Yeah.
And it's so wonderful on top of everything. It feels like you're watching a fairy tale made for me because I'm 34.
I love the relationships. I love the relationships that that she has with people. Everyone obviously uses her as a sounding board because
Octavia Spencer specifically,
right? But
just her talking,
right? Exactly. But because she can't, she can reply. She just can't tell you to shut up,
right?
Right. Well, she can again, but you can you can ignore her by not looking at her and still talk to her.
Yeah.
But yeah. It's a lot of people use her that way, but at the same time, she's so influential. She's not even she's so strong also with her words. She's just a strong woman in general.
The movie has that scene with Richard Jenkins when she's basically telling her the movie thing in the highlight reel of a movie, but in sign language. It's not yelled out. It's not told passionately through voice, but it's told through gesticulating, and it's. Told through him telling, you know, translating for himself and for us, for the audience. And it's done so well. It's a very nice Del Toro touch.
Then, visually pleasing. We didn't even get to mention that.
No, not really.
It looks great. Everything feels like it's in the times.
The bathroom scene sinking is so good.
Yeah. And did you ever notice that the I just came to me right now. In that diner scene, there's like a weird filter on like the camera, it feels.
Yeah.
And
I do remember.
I love it because it makes you feel like you're watching like a flashback, but an old timey thing of like,
right.
I don't know. I think it's just
a lot
really
of great
well
touches
done.
From what they're watching every day on TV to the art that Rich Jenkins is making. He's an art guy, an ad guy, I should say. And very Mad Men, by the way. And so all the touches are wonderfully connected in the end. So yeah, we all recommend it. Shape of Water, obviously,
well,
nominated. Too. Yeah. I mean,
in
so
48
does,
hours, I might as well.
Right. Are you watching that soon from now?
I'm hoping to, yes.
Nice. Let us know what you think. Be great to know. So that's my number two. It is Ralph's number three. And we're on to Ralph's number two. Right?
Yes. But
which
my number two, I can't talk about.
Nope.
Because somebody else decided to put it as their number.
Clearly, number one. God, who did that?
So, Lucas, by all
Luke,
means,
your number
share
two.
Your number two.
My number two is Ralph's number six. It is Thor Ragnarok, which is probably, holy fuck, one of the most times I think I laughed at a movie this year because it was so goddamn amazingly funny. Like,
I'm glad you found that funny.
Taika Waititi did an amazing job with this, considering Thor, the second Thor movie, The Dark World or whatever the hell it was a piece of shit. And I was afraid for this movie.
Yeah, it was very forgettable.
Like, holy shit, like, I loved everything. The colors, the story. Oh, God, the beautiful synth music. Everything was just perfect. And the slapstick humor was just the icing on the cake. It made everything so much better.
I think the breakdown of this Thor reminds me of the breakdown of Batman in the Lego Batman movie, by the way. Just a lot less of it and more subtle, but yeah. So I think it's the same because they treat Thor a lot less seriously than Thor's been treated before. Right?
Yeah.
So
he's like a nobody in this movie and he's got to kind of like bring himself back up.
Yeah. What's interesting, what I really liked about this movie was, Thor has to find himself, obviously. But what they do for the character is that we already liked Thor, I thought so, right? And some of the stuff was kind of funny that he had interactions in the other movies, in the Avenger movies. But you get to explore more of that because of the director of the Taika Waititi. He just does a great job with the Thor character. But I think I end up liking Loki a lot also. Because I really just hated the fact that Loki was like in everything. Don't get me wrong. I like the actor, Middleston, right?
Tom Hiddleston. Yeah.
And I just felt like he was like forced into every Marvel movie where he needed to be, and
he was
this
always like
here,
the best villain too. Like
bringing
the most
this in here,
villain.
I kind of redeemed him, mm-hmm. For me. So it wasn't bad.
I'm with you.
They still have the same problem with the villains, but the movie does a great job of just like almost ignoring that, and everything else is just there, and it works great. And they tie it all up in a nice little bow. Luke said it already earlier, though.
It kind of has a Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol feel, where in that movie, the problems were, like, them finding out how to work as a team and the technology problems with the stuff that kept failing on
right,
them.
Right, right, right.
The villain was barely in the movie.
But Luke did hit it on the nose with it's visually pleasing, fucking colorful. It's colorful when it needs to be, and it's colorful when it's also just wants to be at the same time. It's because there's like a couple bleak moments of color, but which fucking shoots it right in the eye. And it's just funny. Like, and serious things that are happening are funny. And it's good because this is a movie for everybody, not just adults or not just people, adult kids, and I think it treats it. It's a family movie and I think it treats it that way. And that's the way it works out.
Yeah, Jeff Goldblum, the best use of Jeff Goldblum in a long time. I gotta say, he is my favorite thing in this movie. I just want to put that out there. Did not make my list, obviously. And we did review this movie in episode 36, if you are willing to find out more what we think of Thor Ragnarok. Were all three of us available for that one? Or was it
I
just
think
you
we all
and
saw
me?
It together, yeah.
Yeah?
No, cool.
Did
we all see it together?
Okay, cool. Yeah, we all dig it. Episode number 36, if you want to know more. And that is Luke's number two, which is Ross number, what is it? Six. All right. We're on to the last ones, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
My number one is an original film. I still have to mention another two, though, that I haven't talked about yet because I have to wait for your number ones, guys. My number one is an original film by Sean Baker. It is The Florida Project, which I think you guys have heard of, right?
Yes.
No.
Rafi, we really haven't heard about
it. It's got William Dafoe, right?
Willem, yes. William. It's not, well, it's not William.
Well, I call it William.
Okay.
Is it William Dafoe or the
Because you know him so well. Oh, yeah. I'm going to read the description real quick since you guys don't know much about it. Set over one summer, the film follows precocious six-year-old Mooney as she courts mischief and adventure with her ragtag playmates and bonds with her rebellious but caring mother, all while living in the shadows of Disney World. And yes, it is set in Florida, in like a shitty parts of Florida, I guess, or of Orlando, I guess I should say. And like I said, it starts Willem Dafoe. Willem Dafoe is the only actor who is an actor. I mean, the rest are kind of starring non-actors. And Brooklyn Prince, who plays Mooney, pretty much an unknown quantity. She is an actress professionally, but she's, you know, 6-year-old. But all of these are not unknown actors. Some of them, I think, were the mother character was found through Instagram. And let me tell you, she kills it. Yeah. Everyone in this movie kills it. And I've listened and seen Brooklyn Prince, the little girl, who's the main actress and is in almost every scene of this movie. I've seen her do interviews. She's a pro. She's like a little pro. She understands. She's very cordial, very nice and all that. You see her act in this movie and you can tell that she is not acting herself. She is acting a part. And that's how convincing I thought that Brooklyn Prince was for sure a little girl they found somewhere to act this way, have the potty mouth and shit like that. But no, it's an actress playing a part. She apparently was apologizing all the time to her mother for swearing so much after the lines, because she never does that. But she convinces us so well in this movie. So this movie is about the maladjusted, you know, the poor, right, who are living in day by day in this motel with her mother, and the mother is doing everything she can to make sure that they can stay there day by day. And she has her own set of problems, as you can imagine. It's all very, some of it's white trash, but also the opposite of that. Like, some of it's just misfortunate people. And you're following this little girl. And the power of this movie for me, why it's my number one, and why it was my hardest to pick as my number one and decided on it, is that this movie will make you feel so gleeful and so happy to watch this little girl and her friends go from adventure to adventure, but also feel immediately and horribly saddened by everything that they do because of their misfortunate place in the world. There are some things in this movie where you're like, Jesus, where are the parents, right? And there are some other things that happen in this movie where you're like, get the fuck out of there. There's a fire that they start in an abandoned building, for example, unsupervised, these kids create. And obviously, the film does something marvelous where since it's through her perspective, you can't help but laugh at it. You can't help but enjoy the fact that she made it out, B, got out of not having to lie about it or got out of it without getting in trouble. And then there's a scene where like all the parents are standing outside to watch the fireworks. For them, it's like fireworks, right? And one of them is taking a picture of the little girl, and she has to pose for it and pretend like, oh, look at this fire I found, but she totally created the fire.
It's really interesting.
It's such an interesting movie. Willem Dafoe plays like the father in a way, not to her, but to this hotel. He's the manager of this hotel, and he plays it like a stern father in a way. He has to kick people out when they have to, of course, but he does his very best. Like, he makes the place look like it's $1 million. He works so hard to keep this place called Magic Castle Hotel as much magical castle as ever. And it's almost like he's doing it for the little girls and boys that are living day by day, unknown to the poverty that they actually live in. But all they want to do is have fun and run around, right?
Yeah.
And it's so wonderful
how he protects it.
Exactly.
That's good.
And the movie uses them to protect the kids as much as possible. And the movie further enthralls in these kids' lives. It's so good. Huh?
Nothing.
What are you going to say?
Nothing.
No, tell me.
No, I said, I guess he's Willem the friend in this one.
He's Willem the friend. Yes, thank you. Well, I mean, I could listen to it. Yeah, I got it. It is his most understated thing. He's not crazy at all. This is his least craziest movie.
Okay.
Yeah. But I can see why he's nominated for Best Supporting, too, by the way. He totally is the backbone of the movie.
Because we found out that he could tone it down.
He could tone it down. No, he always could. It's just that people keep hiring him to tone it up.
To tone it up, right, exactly.
Yeah. Exactly.
I want to tone this movie up, Willem Dafoe.
I mean, I think David Oscar. Lynch and all these people. What?
This is the same guy that did Tangerine 2 years ago, right?
Yes, yes. Which also right. made my, I think my made my 11 to 20 at the time. But that movie is also very higher. Good.
Okay.
Maybe it was higher, I don't remember, offhand. But that movie and this movie, a lot of it was shot, not all of it, but he shot a lot of it through his iPhone. In Tangerine, he shot it all through his iPhone. I think this one, he used like real cameras, but some of it through his iPhone. Okay. He lets the movie breathe very well. It's a super fun movie, but also very sad at the same time. It's such a good movie. There is a twist and plots that go along with the movie, but it's basically plotless. You're just watching this little girl having the best summer of her life, essentially, in this rundown place or whatever. And it has my favorite ending of any movie of the year that it made me choke up and kind of, I will admit it, I cried like a little baby with a skinny and shit. And I think any movie that has that powerful thing usually makes my number one, because very few movies can do that to me. This sure. movie did it twice, because I saw the ending twice in two different occasions, and it still made me cry. Because the ending is so powerful. It's just so fucking good. It's so good. I recommend everyone to watch it. I wish it got nominated for more things, but it got some attention. So
watch it in the privacy of your own room.
Right, right. So that's the Florida Project. Available nowhere. Unfortunately, it's in that gray area where it's not out yet. And it's not in theaters right now, but it will make it out soon.
Yeah, I think I just saw it was January 30th. You could rent it on Amazon.
Sweet.
Okay, that's rent. Good.
Yeah, nice.
And it's like 90 miles from me if I wanted to see it. I just looked it up.
90 miles.
Day trip. Yeah, it's in San Diego.
Yeah, that's far. Yeah. 89 miles, you could do it, right?
In a heartbeat.
Right. So that's my number one. Roth, what is your number one?
My number one is a movie that finally...
We can all three of us talk about.
Everybody can talk about, yes. Is a bonus movie that came out. What bonus was it?
This movie came out in July. We did this bonus a long time ago.
We did. Because it was... it's a horror movie. Oscar, you should be proud.
I'm very proud of you.
Yeah. This movie is Get Out.
It made it my list, too.
Yeah, Get Out. Yeah. Directed and written by Jordan Peele. Starring... I'm not going to say that. No. Starring Daniel Kaluuya.
Nominated that fucker. That's awesome.
Yeah, he got nominated. So exactly. Allison Williams. Bradley Whitford, which... Good for him.
Very good.
Catherine Keener. And Caleb Landry Jones.
Yes.
What's it called?
So Caleb Landry Jones, he's in Twin Peaks too. Plays a sleazeball. He's in Three Billboards. Plays kind of a sleazeball ad guy. He's a lot in a lot of movies.
He plays a sleazeball in the
not sleazeball, but he's kind of like he's like come on.
Yeah. So
in your office.
Yeah. So this I don't know. It's a weird mystery horror movie going on and. Mm-hmm. I got hoodwinked, and this is why it's my number one, because it hoodwinked me, and it shouldn't have, because I totally saw where it needed to go, and I totally saw where things were going to happen, but the movie gets me involved that I let it take me on the ride, right, mm-hmm. and I let it get to me, right, that by the time we get to the certain things where I should be like, oh, well, this is the solution to that, I forgot about that, mm-hmm. like... And I was like, all the new things that kept popping up, like towards the end, obviously, I was just like, fuck, I didn't even see that coming, but I should have. Like, I did see that coming. I just forgot that to remind myself, or I forgot that I saw that coming like 25 minutes ago because the movie was that fucking interesting. And if a movie could fucking hoodwink me when I already knew what's going on, like, it just literally just said, no, yeah, you sure you got it, but like, yeah, you'll be fine. Like, and then I like, fuck, I should have seen that coming, but I didn't for no reason. I mean, that's a really good movie. And especially for a horror kind of mystery kind of thing going on.
A genre movie. It's pretty hard for a genre movie.
Yeah, it really is. But I think Jordan Peele does a great job of hitting this, like, topic, like, just of how African Americans
racial over awareness,
right? Yeah,
being a racial this is
really is, and it's like it's just like how anybody not white needs to know how to act. Like I feel sometimes the same way. Right. If I'm in a room with all white people, forget it. Like my spider senses are tingling. Everything I am on a full alert. Yeah. Like it's like if I'm driving 100 miles per hour. And in traffic, and I can't slow down. Like it's one of those like feelings. Like I'm up.
No, it feels like you're driving and you're alone in the road, like driving by yourself, and there's a cop behind you. It feels like that.
That also, it could be. Which I've had that situation
happen. Like just not following you, but you're on the same path.
But you're on the same path, right? Yeah. It's just the worst. Yeah,
it's the worst moment.
But I don't know. This movie does a great job of just like of the character that we have of what's it called? What the hell was his name in the movie?
Chris.
Yeah, Chris.
I saw this the other day, by the way.
Yeah, I actually saw this movie twice already. But with Chris is that he lets things slide because he wants to be the bigger man and the better person, right? But it's funny how his first reactions should be to do certain things. And I love it that it plays both sides of he's the cool, calm, collected African-American, right?
Yeah.
Who wants to be the better person, wants to grow, wants to, you know, things like that. And his best friend is just like, oh, hell no. Like, no. Like, we
Jeffrey Dahmer.
Exactly. Like, yeah, listen, man. We don't go to the woods? What you? No. White people? No. No
sex
way.
Slave?
Right, exactly. Right. Like, he's your typical, what you, I would consider your typical African-American. What's it called? And it's really funny. And it's really funny. And those moments, these weird moments of levity in the movie, in a horror movie, because there's so much tension going on that it's like, you can, it's just so, I don't know. There's a lot of cool stuff going on in this movie. And I just really love it. I love what they do with all, like, the whole plot overall, like what's going on with the whole family and how they do these weird transactions with rich ass white people.
Oh my god, the bingo thing!
Yeah, dude, it was really good. It was a bingo or auction card.
Well, it was bingo cards, but it was an auction.
It was an auction. Yeah, right. Yeah, it was both. Yeah,
it was both. I think. Yeah,
man, I don't know what else to really say besides the fact that it was a fucking home run. I'm talking about, like, this guy he didn't even need to score a home run, but, like, he just went, like, oh, what, first pitch? Knocked it out of the park.
Right.
And it was phenomenal and a great job for Jordan Peele, even though it's just not his first movie. But yeah.
It's his first movie.
Directorial debut, yeah, technically. He did the other movie.
He co-wrote Keanu.
Yeah, he co-wrote Keanu. Right. I thought he almost co-directed, but
I don't know if he directed, but maybe somebody else did. Anyway, I guess my turn. It made my number three, which is Luke's number nine as well, by the way. It made all the lists. I'm so glad. Even though it's my number three, and I said my top three are kind of my number ones because they all feel very similar. Get Out is the perfect movie of 2017 for me. Like, I want that movie to win everything.
Right, and it has best director and it has best actor.
And best writing, which I think it needs. Original screenplay. The perfect... the perfect shifts in between the, you know, when it jumps to levity when it needs to, like with like the best friend when he calls, like right when you need him to call is the perfect time when the movie decides to check up on his friend, and vice versa when certain informations come about. And some of the humor in this movie comes from the awkwardness, which comes from the horror of it. And the movie opens up so horribly. It opens up with Lakeith Stanfield, the guy from Atlanta, who he gets kidnapped for being in a rich white neighborhood.
Right, exactly.
That's his horror movie.
But what's really funny is that he acts like nobody acts in this movie how in a movie would. Like, in a movie world, people act different, right? And that's the way I see it. But I think lately, obviously, we're trying to get more of the actual human perspective, right? And I think he fucking nails it where he's like, he sees the car slowing down,
he's like, nope, I'm turning the fuck around.
He's like, I'm turning the fuck around. I'm not dealing with this shit. Like, nope, I'm not going to get my ass lynched around here.
Nope.
Whatever. And it's really funny, but at the same time, like, I would probably do the same exact thing if something was like that was happening. Yep. And most people would. Like, right. It's really well done.
Yeah. It really works on the culture's fears and expectations. It is the expectations of the cultural zeitgeist of what we think. Like, we assume a cop is going to pull over or something. We assume these things are going to happen because of this. And yes, some of those do happen, but in an extreme way, you know, with the horror element of it. And it adds to it, and this is an amazing ending, which leads to the biggest crowd laughter momentary when, you know, the car door is revealed and it's not what you think it is. Not spoiling anything here, but you all know what I'm talking about. And it's such a great fucking moment.
Right.
It's such a great head fake. That's just so obvious. I should have seen that coming.
Well, exactly. But how it ends, too, is just like with his friend just going like, dude.
Not a wasted scene either.
Right. I don't know. Just
like the real conversation, the only real conversation he has with a white guy is turns out to be the reason for a lot of the horror in this finality, in this third act. Not, again, not saying much, but this is the movie that surprisingly works in every single level I can imagine a movie could. Because not only is this movie, like, I think critically amazing and should be even like taught in some sort of like progressive school kind of thing, but also it's made a lot of money. Everyone saw it. It was the best crowd I saw in a movie, the best movie I saw in a crowd.
Yeah.
And it has all these things going for it. It has every element. It's also it's not just a stuffy movie that no one's going to see. It is a movie everyone's seen and that everyone agrees should be on there.
It was Blumhouse, right?
Yeah, Blumhouse, yeah. So, Luke, do you want anything to add? And I know Raph and I kind of
talked I know. No, I literally saw this movie yesterday. I was like, I
got to
see this right before we recorded. And I was like, fuck, now I got to re-edit my list.
Yeah, and nice. You know what? I'm glad it made your top 10 because it's...
Yeah, I'm really glad. I mean, it's been on my, like, I have to watch this movie type situation. So I'm pretty glad that I finally saw it.
Oh, man, I thought you'd seen it earlier in the year.
I wanted to, just never got a chance. We had very little... We didn't even have... That, it wasn't little expectations. I was looking forward to watching the movie.
Yeah, I was
because
excited.
Of the fact that it was a directorial debut.
Right. It looked good. I like the actor because he was from The West Wing, right?
Who?
Is that him? No, am I getting wrong?
The white guy is from West Wing, yeah, the father?
Yeah, Bradley Whitford, right.
Yeah, but the other guy, the Daniel, whatever his last name is, he's done like one or two episodes of Black Mirror.
Yeah, he was in the bicycling one.
Exactly, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. He's English too, right? He's English.
Yeah, he's British. Yeah.
Damn, they always take our accents really
took our jobs.
Damn, English people, bro. Stay away. All right, so that's your number one, Raph.
Yeah.
What is your number one, Luke?
Okay, my number one happens to be your number nine, Ralph's number two.
Nice.
And it also made my number one in the mid-year, you know? And
yep, it
still
did.
Your Name. I was just blown away by this beautiful anime directed by Makoto Shinkai. Who hurt you, man? Who hurt you? That's what I want to know.
Wow. He loves cats, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, but oh man, it's just amazing. It just came out of the blue. I heard all about it, how it's, you know, breaking records in Japan. Then we happened to catch it in April, and holy fuck, I fell in love with it. I mean, it's, you know, it's the story of these two kids, and they're swapping bodies for like a day at a time. You know, you have a girl who wants to live in Tokyo, and you know, she lives that whole Tokyo thing as a boy. Then, you know, the boy lives in a small town with, you know, with her friends and whatnot. It's crazy. But then, you know, you find out all this crazy, you know, weird stuff happening. There's a time rift. Then there's, like, a crazy comet that's about to, you know, wipe her whole town out. And she doesn't know. Then he doesn't know that he's in the future. It's crazy. I loved it. I loved every moment of it. I think... I've seen this movie at least 10 times.
No way, Billy?
Yeah.
Damn.
I saw it one time in the theaters. I owned the Blu-ray. I almost got the Japanese Blu-ray because it was going to come out like a couple weeks earlier. But I got the American Collector's Edition. I mean, I even shipped it to myself in California so I could keep watching it. I think I saw it twice while being here already. I bootlegged it while I was in fucking Alaska on a 3G connection on my cell phone in like the lowest quality possible just so I could watch it over there.
Damn, son. Nice.
And I love all, like, you know, Shinkai's other previous work, and it's just I'm amazed. And obviously this movie is huge in Japan as well. They even have tours around like some of the places that he uses inspiration or actual locations, and this movie is just making a ton of money. I think it's already the number one highest grossing anime movie. And I think
ever?
For Japan, I believe.
Right. Well, yeah, that's where Anime Central is.
Yeah.
Oh, I just mentioned the company name, didn't I?
I don't know.
Isn't it Anime Central comic book or something?
That's
magazine.
It's a con.
Okay. Alright, whatever.
What do you guys think?
I think we are in agreement. I think this movie does a great job of mixing sci-fi and fantasy. I mean, we did a review about this, right? Earlier in the year?
Right, yeah, this was on our episode number 22.
Yeah, 22. So, I mean, we all fell in love with this movie. I've seen the movie at least 3 times already. It's, I don't know. It's something like it's, this is the stories that I love in animes. And I don't, I'm not usually prone to movies for anime movies, just because I think they do a better job in a show. But in a movie, this fucking does a great job. It's a hefty movie. There's a lot going on, and there's a lot of supposed endings that you feel that's going to happen, mm-hmm. Or at least
there's a heist in there too.
There's a lot of shit great going stuff. On in this movie, and it's a love story. It's like these two characters fall in love for each other, and one falls in love for her boobs or his own boobs, but this crazy love story that can't. Technically shouldn't be happening, but with some weird fantasy and sci-fi mixed in, kind of works, makes it happen. And I don't know, it's kind of bonkers, but it works out towards the end. And there's just like sense of urgency, especially towards like the third part,
the third act
of the movie, that like makes you want to like get rushed to like, is everything gonna be okay? Like, and every time it comes up,
why did you take your time for so long?
Right, and I just like, see, every time it comes up, I'm just like, why? Like, come on, let's get there already. Like, and I don't know, it's really well done. And you get this diverse culture within. It's really cool to see how the diverse culture just in Japan. You get to see these people who live in the city, or the kid who lives in the city. And lives a city life, and you know they just go to school and do your typical thing. Compared to the girl who lives in the country and who does very cultural thing to her family. That you know the thing with making sake, and and how everything is just you know more toned down and a lot calmer in comparison. And you could make the same comparison here in the States, that we have the same thing, small towns to big cities. But you get to see this in the Japanese culture and how different it is for them. I don't know. I really enjoyed it. What else did you think, Oscar?
I love the tonal shifts of this film, because it starts off as a Freaky Friday fun, you know, fun, light, humor romance, almost like a rom-com. But it's not, obviously. And the film actually opens with a very mystical, like a mysterious, like, meteorite that's going through the sky, and it's giving you some sort of foregrounded information that you don't know anything about yet. And by the time that comes back up again, you've fallen for these characters in such a way by their, you know, their curiosity, shy teen tenderness of what does body swapping feel like to two regular people who are supposedly, maybe not, destined for each other in such a weird way to say that. That you fall in love with them, whether you like it or not. I think by the third act of the film, when you start realizing that time pressure, you mentioned Roth. And I totally am in agreement with you guys. My number 9, yeah, I know it's not as high, but it was for a long time like my number 3 or 2. Just have to shuffle it around. But I'm glad I made it to my list. I'm glad I made it to everyone's list. And that is Luke's number 1, Your Name. I think, are we done now?
I want to say so.
One right. More thing.
What's up?
They're making.
Oh yeah,
J.J. Abrams.
Yeah.
Yeah, is producing an American remake. Mm-hmm. Oof, that's so much lens flare. I feel it already.
I hope it's better than the Death Note remake.
Ooh,
live action.
I still haven't seen that one.
Yeah, it's a live action movie. No, that one sucked. That's on Netflix. Don't watch it. Real quick, before we do the rest of the stuff, Luke, why don't you give us your number, your 1 through 10 again, just to give a refresher for everyone.
Okay. From 1 to 10 or 10 to 1?
You can do 10 to 1. That's fine.
Okay. Oklahoma City, Get Out, The Big Sick, 3 Billboards, Logan, Baby Driver, A Silent Voice, Star Wars Episode 9, The Last Jedi. Episode 8, The Last Jedi. Thor Ragnarok, and Your Name.
Ruff?
He's already looking forward to episode 9.
I know, right? He's already missed it.
That's how fast he was.
Freudian slip.
From 10 to 1, The Big Sick, The Lego Batman Movie, Baby Driver, Logan, Thor Ragnarok, Atomic Blonde, 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, The Shape of Water, Your Name, and Get the Fuck Out.
Get Out? My 10 is, and up, is The Lost City of Z, Your Name, Mother, Baby Driver, The Lego Batman Movie, Blade Runner 2049, Lady Bird, Get Out, The Shape of Water, and The Florida Project.
How do you feel now?
I can't move.
You can't move.
Why can't I move?
You're paralyzed.
Just like that day when you did nothing. You did nothing.
Now, sink into the floor.
Wait.
Sink.
Let's give honorable mentions. Luke, what are yours?
You have to come back to me real fast for that one.
Okay, Rob.
You want to know what my number 10, 11 were so close. Don't get me wrong, like my 11 through like 18 or something are pretty close too, but that 11 is Logan Lucky. I actually really like that movie.
I haven't seen it again. I've been meaning to rewatch it. Did you revisit it?
No, I didn't finish it. I remember having
so much fun in the movie
theater. I saw 1.5 times, and I was still having fun that halftime.
Nice.
So, yeah, there's definitely one for sure. Logan Lucky. John Hillbilly. Wick.
What, 7-Eleven to Ocean's 11 or something?
Yeah, exactly. John Wick Chapter 2, I really enjoyed. I know you guys didn't enjoy it as much as I did, but I did. Spider-Man Homecoming was definitely an honorable mention for me. I want Wind River. That's another just in the top.
Me too, man.
I wanted to find a space for it.
I wanted it in my top 10.
I really did. I did. Yeah. But it was a really good movie. And I don't know. I wanted to find a space. Blade Runner, I'm 2049. I'm glad it made it on yours.
Yeah.
Like I said, I wanted to rewatch it because I just didn't know where I landed with it. Same thing with Star Wars. Star Wars is another movie for me. I definitely wanted a revisit for that. I was going to go watch it when you saw it again with Matt, but I just couldn't do it.
I couldn't do that day, yeah.
I was really busy, and I was like, we're going to go with him that day.
Holds up too, man.
And I was like, no, go with Oscar. Oscar's willing to go watch the movie.
Yeah.
What's it called? Let me see. What else do we have? No, that's it for now. I can't think of anything else, but I'm pretty sure another movie will pop up.
I have a lot of movies here. So.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you do. Yeah. Oh, War for the Planet of the Apes. Sorry.
Which one?
War for the Planet of the Apes.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
I think it was a great wrap-up.
Very good.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any of those Planet of the Apes movies yet.
Oh,
they
really?
Suck. You and Matt.
Bro, get on that shit. All right. Luke, what are your honorable mentions?
Betting on Zero, Atomic Blonde, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, Wonder Woman, Trainspotting 2, and Spider-Man Homecoming.
Nice. I don't know the first one. What was the first one? Is that a documentary? Oh,
that was one of a documentary.
That's what I figured. I figured if I don't recognize it, it must be a documentary. Not to say they're bad. I really feel bad that only Luke has one and none of us have, Rafi and I have zero.
I'm surprised
that's
the
not
founder
good.
Didn't make it for you guys.
The founder sucked.
I thought you guys liked it.
It was fine. It was okay. It's grown worse in my head, I guess. Okay, so here it comes. My number 11 through 30. I made a top 30.
Jesus
yes, I made a 11. Everyone shut up.
Sad fuck.
All right, guys. If you hear snoring, you'll know why.
No, don't. 11. Raw. My number 11.
Oh, he's got the number
Raw.
Two.
Right here. Raw. The French movie. That's how much it's close. Anyway. 12 is Star Wars The Last Jedi. And then it's Personal Shopper. I totally love that
was a bad movie.
Yeah. It's a good discussion also. 14 is The Big Sick. And then it's The Disaster Artist, which I really want in my top 10. All these I want in my top 10, honestly. Then Colossal, which we talked a lot about around June or May of the year. And then it's Wind River. And then The Beguiled. Well, I don't know if you dug The Beguiled.
Yeah, you saw it.
Atomic Blonde is my number 19, I know. Then it's Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri. And then the 20 through whatever I'm just going to name as I see them. Brawl in Cell Block 99. You guys
didn't
have
get
got
to
see this movie. Oh, my God. It's so good.
What movie?
Brawl in Cell Block 99.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Watch it. It's so good. T2 Trainspotting. Gerald's Game, which is a Netflix movie. Graduation, which is a Romanian film. Coco is also in this list. Mudbound. Molly's Game. Logan made this list. Itanya is my number 30.
Wait, Molly's Game is 2017?
Yeah.
I thought it was limited 20. Oh, because I saw it in 2018.
Dude, it was nominated for Best Screenplay, bro. It came out in December.
It came out like December 28th or something.
No, it came out in Christmas.
Christmas, there you go. Yes. Christmas, yeah.
And then Okja also made my top 30.
Okay.
Those are my honorable mentions. What about disappointments, guys? Movies that did not make the snuff for a lot of reasons. Wouldn't have made or any list had they. You guys want me to start off while you guys think about it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I have. I read everything.
We know.
Yeah, okay.
The founder.
Some of these are disappointing because they could. I wanted them to meet certain expectations more than they should. So they're not necessarily bad movies. Some of them are really bad movies.
Sure.
Like Cars 3, not very good.
Yeah.
Just playing whatever. The Circle.
Cars 2.
The Circle had a disappointment aftertaste a month after I saw it. But I want to see it again, though, because I did like elements about it.
But I liked elements about it, too.
Yeah.
But it was just that
Guardians good. 2, I think, was a bigger disappointment than The Circle. So
agreed.
Don't get off your high horse.
A bigger disappointment, but it was
yourself. Yeah, I know it's on your honorable mentions. Look, I'm sorry. King Arthur, great opening. I love the beginning.
You know, I just saw that, but I missed like the first half hour of the movie. Super weird.
Yeah, I bet it feels weird.
I bet it feels weird.
That movie we reviewed somewhere in middle of the year, Blame, which is that anime on Netflix. Yeah. Great premise and world building. But
and then they kind of like fucked it. Yeah.
I know I'm a solo person on this. I don't like Dunkirk. I don't care.
Oh, yeah, same here.
I don't care what kind of experience you're trying to show me. I don't care if it's nominated for every movie. Christopher Nolan's not a god. It's just a shitty movie. I don't understand why people love this movie. It's also my most overrated movie. Like the movie is almost. Yeah.
Apparently, some guy recut the whole movie into like an 8-minute like short film, and it's supposed to be much better.
I believe it. He needs a new editor. Anyway, Dunkirk, Valerian, the City of a Thousand Planets, falls away after the beginning. Oh, really bad. I mean, great stuff in it, but bro. Detroit, you and I talked a lot about that.
Sure.
It is a bonus episode that came out for January if you want to hear our thoughts on that, why it disappointed us. What Happened to Monday? Why did I pick that movie? The Mummy, the Tom Cruise one. Good, really good scenes. One of my favorite action scenes of the year comes from that movie, but that doesn't mean the movie's good. Kong Skull Island is a lot of fun, but doesn't make any sense. Murder on the Orient Express, I think, was fun, but not very good beyond that. The Snowman.
My God.
No. Everyone, just stay away from that movie. Okay. Bright had great world building, but not good enough yet. Bright, the Netflix original that's supposed to be like New Age or whatever. American Assassin was so boring, I forgot all about it. Justice League, we reviewed it. Just awful. I don't give a fuck. Suburbicon, that one I really had
that's
a high
for
hopes
sure.
for.
Yeah, me too.
George Clooney directed a movie that was a clunker. Rough Night sucked. Which is funny because it made one of my favorite comedies, which is the other one that came out. What's it called?
With Bridesmaids?
No, not Bridesmaids. It came out at the same time. I mentioned it a while ago, one of the What We've Been Watching. I didn't write it down because it's like one of those middle movies that I just forget. It's about the same thing. Like these girls are going to New Orleans and they're going to... Girls Trip. Yes.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted that girl who does the banana and the grapefruit scene. If you watch the movie, you know what I'm talking about. Which is the funniest scene maybe of the year. I kind of wanted her to be his best supporting actress because that's how committed she is to the actress.
Damn.
Yeah. The Dark Tower sucked. Death Note sucked. War Machine, didn't like it. Baywatch,
no.
Not very good. The Wall, it Ghost in the Shell. Do you guys remember Ghost in the Shell? That was bad. Power Rangers was alright, I guess.
No, it wasn't. It was good.
It was alright.
It was
the Founder, Rob, is right here. I wrote The Founder down. Alright, you guys have any titles? I mentioned a lot.
You pretty much mentioned most of the ones I probably agree with. I didn't see that many movies this year, though, so...
Yeah, I I got the same
Wait,
message.
Wait. I want the audience to know.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, Luke just texted us. I'm counting Molly's Game for 2018 since it was limited release.
Yeah. I was in Palm Springs.
No, I'm with you, man. I'm counting Phantom Thread as 2018, so I understand you.
Oh, yeah, so am I. Once I see it.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
I got one. I got a bad movie.
Okay.
It was Patriots Day.
That's a bit.
It's the one with Marky Mark. It's about the Boston bombing.
Oh God, yeah.
And Marky Mark is the only reason I hate this movie, because he should not be in there.
Hmm.
Yeah, that sucks. I won The Wall.
The wall, I mentioned briefly. God, I mean, that's when they found out that he cannot carry a movie by himself.
Yeah.
What's his name, the guy from Godzilla? What about movies we missed out on, missed opportunities, the ones we really missed out, we wish we could see before we made our lists? I know Luke's list is slightly longer, but you want to try it, Luke? Go first on this one?
Well, obviously the Shape of Water.
Right.
Oh, man. You have to come back to me on that one. That's...
What about Molly's Game?
No, I saw that in 2018.
All right, Roth, you have any missed opportunities?
Mother, for sure. Oh, I definitely wanted to watch that movie. What's that one movie? I just had it in my head. It's,
I don't know.
I actually wanted to watch Dunkirk, but you talked so bad about it.
Yeah, but everyone's talking so highly about it. You listen to any review.
The thing is, when you came out of the movie, because you wanted me to watch it also, but you were like, it's not bad. It's just like, it's just boring. And I was like, okay. and then now you're just like, yeah, it's just bad.
Yeah, it's just an assault to my senses.
Sure. I definitely wanted to watch Bright. And I'm sad that it was.
It had some fun element. It's fun to watch. Easy to watch, I would say that. But don't think any more higher than that.
There's a... Oh, what's that other nominated one? That's a big one?
Call Me By Your Name?
No, the other one.
Oh, that's one of mine. I'm reading mine, I guess.
Yeah.
The Darkest Hour?
The Darkest Hour. Okay. That's definitely a miss for me.
Off from my memory, by the way.
I actually wanted to see... what's that? American... Not Assassin. The other one. The Tom Cruise one. American Made?
American Made. Oh, you missed that. I missed that one. That was like in the middle tier movie. Bad, not good, but
yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was one of those weird movies. I've been trying to catch up with movies, so I've been trying to watch.
I know you told me like I can't give you my list yet, Rob.
Yeah,
or Oscar.
I did want to watch Molly's Game also, since it's a 2017 release.
you totally can. It's a 2018 pick.
You totally can, Rob. You're good. You're solid. You're golden.
2017.
I Tonya.
I saw.
We're counting on Tanya as 2018. At least I am.
I
2017.
Saw,
I saw. 2017.
No, yeah,
I saw.
2018.
I saw Tanya. Yeah.
All right. Here's my missed opportunities. The Breadwinner, which I hear is the best animated film ever. Other than Your Name. Sorry, Luke. I haven't seen it yet.
To watch right now.
Wonderstruck, which is the latest by Todd Haynes, the guy who did, Carol and stuff. Ghost Story. I have it downstairs, still haven't seen it. Sure. The Salesman, which is by Asghar Farhadi. A Fantastic Woman, Faces Places, which is nominated for Best Doc. The Darkest Hour, Call Me By Your Name. There's a movie called Blue Beard that looks fascinating. Icarus is a documentary on Netflix.
Fucking Icarus, that's another one for sure.
Yes, that one's nominated for Best Doc, too.
I know, and I think it'll win it. That's, yeah.
BPM, which stands for Beats Per Minute. I know nothing about it. All I know is that it's making a lot of people's top 10, and I want to know why. I did manage to actually see this movie, so I don't know why I put it on here. Last Flag Flying, which is Richard Linklater's latest movie. Kind of disappointment, though. Rat Film, which I know nothing about. It's a documentary. Luke, you'll... Rat Film. You like rats. here's a biopic that I really want to see. It looks amazing. It's called Professor Marston and the Wonder Women.
Yes, I totally want to see that.
That looks awesome. I really want to see that. It's about the relationships that creates. So good. Mary and the Witch's Flower, which is, Studio Ghibli has gone down. The new studio, supposedly, like the son of whatever. These people who came from the Studio Ghibli people created their own studio. This is their first film coming out of that. And it's called Mary and the Witch's Flower. That's how it got come out. That wouldn't have come out until 2018 anyway. So we're expecting that soon. And Bigsby Bear. So, Luke, do you have any missed opportunities you want to mention now?
Yes, I still haven't seen Split, John Wick 2.
Watch Split.
Cure for Wellness.
How have you not seen John Wick 2? You were in Alaska.
HBO.
It was on HBO, like reruns all the fucking time. What the fuck?
It's on my iTunes.
Okay, the Lego Batman movie. What else? I did want to see The Lost City of Z.
Yeah, you do.
I do want to finish. I kind of want to see the first 30 minutes of King Arthur, Legend of the Sword. I want to see what they did with Alien Covenant, because I didn't see that.
I saw that.
Covenant.
Whatever. Raw.
Raw, man. Watch Raw. It'll fuck you up.
Resident Evil, the final chapter, because I've seen all the rest of them.
I saw the first two in this one.
I guess.
Yes, he did. That's right. I remember now. I saw all of them.
Oscar was like, oh, man, you missed a lot of fucking shit.
Yeah, a lot of shit,
like,
yeah.
Okay, War for the Planet of the Apes, Dark Tower.
But you guys start with from the Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
I know. Logan Lucky,
good movie.
Death Note, despite it being bad,
no,
I'm willing to give it good, a shot.
Priorities.
Kingsman.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mother, the Blade Runner.
Excuse me. Mother.
Mother! Ma.
I can't. I'm in a hotel room. I can't really yell. But yeah. And then most of the ones you mentioned, yeah. So, yeah.
Everything
other
else.
Other movies came out.
No, not everything Oscar mentioned because I have no clue what he mentioned.
No, no clue.
But I definitely also will say yeah. Florida Project because that movie sounds really cool.
I gave you a copy. So, I think I gave it to Luke too. Maybe not. I don't know. I could have left before I got it.
Yeah.
But I recommend it for sure. Let's talk about two more things here, and then we'll call it quits. What is your favorite opening, or some of the favorite openings of the year? Because some of these movies have amazing openings that are, you know, don't make a list or anything like that. And I want to say Valerian in the City of a Thousand Planets is contending, other than Baby Driver, for my favorite opening. It plays to a space oddity as they go through the years of space travel for humanity.
Yeah, that is pretty.
That
cool.
is. That is a great opening.
That is pretty cool. You just like the song a lot, though.
But no, I love how they use the song. It's
yeah, no, no, I get it.
Yeah. You have anything like that, guys?
I got nothing that I can think of. I'll just say your name for your name's sake.
Well, we mentioned this before, but Get Out has a great opening and a great ending, too. That one has everything.
Yeah.
The Lego Batman movie, where the credits are coming up, like, silence, black. Then the nice words come up, you know, that whole thing. The Shape of Water has a great opening with the, you know, the introduction of the story. Lady Bird has a two-part opening, which I mentioned about her, you know, jumping off of a running car. Remember The Villainous? Have you seen that movie, Ralph? The Villainous?
No.
I let you borrow this on Blu-ray. It's like a Kill Bill version type of movie. And, yeah. And The Villainous has a great bloody-ass opening POV action scene. It's really cool. Do you have any now?
No, you mentioned most of them. I actually like the Bad Batch's opening also.
Yes.
It was a pretty good opening.
I agree. It tells you just enough to get you curious.
You 100%
right. Right. What about finales? I'll say Splits.
Your name.
Your name.
Sorry.
Five from not our top ten.
What about the beginning? The middles.
Right. The middle. You like the score? Which score you like better?
Yeah.
I mentioned the Florida Project, but I'm not gonna mention my top ten stuff. Split has an awesome ending. Would you agree, Ralph?
For you, yeah.
You know, not for you? Really?
Yeah, okay.
Come on. No? You weren't excited? Right.
Yeah, I was excited.
Is it just James and I who were excited?
Just not as excited as you.
Okay. Fine. Colossal?
Yes, I would agree with you there, yes.
Okay. Alien Covenant.
It was okay, yeah.
Actually, it has also one of my favorite beginnings too, because it starts off with the booting up of David, right?
Well, that is true. Yes, John Wick Chapter 2.
Definitely. That was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Oh god, with the crowd and shit, and yeah, it was really good.
Yeah.
Velocity of Z with the mirror and the wife leaving.
Yes.
Perfect ending. Logan has a great fucking ending.
Slight had an interesting ending.
Slight definitely had, oh yeah, very curious and like, very, I want more.
Yeah,
and then fuck you movie for stopping.
No? Right, exactly.
Coco. Dude, Coco.
Still haven't seen that ending.
No, I mean, that's not just the, I mean, we're talking about, it's not the ending, but it's like the scene of, the tearjerker scene, one of the tearjerker scenes of anger for sure. It's so
stupid
good.
Fire alarm.
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. Atomic Blonde has a great ending.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
In the Russian hotel, or the hotel scene there at the end. Mother, I know you guys haven't seen it, but it has a very creepy fucking ending.
Suburbicon, because it ended.
My last one here is Personal Shopper. I love the ending when she's communing with the ghost, maybe. Is she about to kill herself? Things like that.
Okay.
A lot of crazy things there. Anything?
I actually like, because of how simple it ends, The Foreigner. How it ends.
Oh, it just fucking ends.
Just because it ends. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Right. It just ends.
And
right.
He just gets home. He comes back and like leads his normal life.
Fucking Chinese stoicism over there.
Fucking, exactly, yeah.
I agree. That's good.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to mention about the year in general? You guys love it, hate it, good year of movies? What's going on?
The beginning of this year was strong.
Strong as fuck.
Yeah, I mean, Get Out was my number one and it came out February.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of rare. Like,
really rare.
And it's I think indie movies are making a bigger hit, bigger splash than other movies are. And I'm actually glad if the new movies or in more independent movies come out earlier in the year. This way, we have more of a chance for the bigger, for more audiences to watch them instead of end of the year, because end of the year is really hard.
Yeah,
you can't get a
It's overstuffed.
Exactly. Yeah. Even middle of the year is overstuffed because you have like all that action stuff going on.
Yeah, there's
a lot of like big blockbuster hits.
Yeah, that's when they reserve a lot of the action. I say 4 of my top 10 came out in the first like quarter of the year, which is Get Out, Lego Batman movie, Your Name, and The Lost City of Z all came out before June.
Yeah, I'm pretty much close to you also.
Before me, I think.
Yeah. Get Out, Logan.
Yeah.
Lego Batman. I think Baby Driver. Oh, no, Baby Driver came out in, it was like right before blockbuster season.
Yeah, yeah. So I keep running tally roughly. Right, I saw 114 movies in 2017. Of 2017, I should say.
Jesus, I didn't see even anything remotely close to that.
I mean,
I did not keep track this year.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure I'm in the upper 60s.
Yeah, no, you did.
I usually watch around close to 100, so.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm not going to ask Luke because I know he's been out too much to watch as money.
I mean, when you're stuck in a place where there's not even a theater and
right.
then shitty internet for.
And then snowstorms that stop the chances you might go out.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that's kind of fun.
Good times.
All right, I think we're going to cut it there. You have been listening for only 2 hours. Not that bad, guys. I thought we would last a lot longer.
That's why we do the sharing of the lists.
Wow, Luke, wow. That's it for our show. You have been listening to another movie podcast. Remember, you can follow everything we've done and ever will do at otherpodcast.com. You can follow me personally on Twitter and on Letterboxd if you want to see all these movies I've been watching. It's on Armin Filmmaker, which is filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Ruff?
I might do Letterboxd this year to catch up to put my movies on. So that's good. No, that's the only reason I would do it though.
That's the reason I started doing it.
Right, but Molly's
maybe
game would
I
be
should
a,
do that.
Molly's game would be a 2017 though.
2018.
That's
you can follow me at Gamer Ralph. That is with two R's and an F, and it's 2017. Go ahead.
And Luke,
at Blind Noir, N-O-I-R, B-L-I-N-D. I feel like I have to spell it just because
Noir
you guys
blind
do things. Yeah. At Blind Noir.
Well, he has to say F because a lot of people think it's PH. There's no other spell,
well,
fucking
sure
way to spell Noir.
Ralph. Yeah.
Yeah. Bitch.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's see. We are taking a big break, like 3 week break, close to 4 weeks.
Yeah.
We're going to come back in late February to talk about the Oscar ceremony. Yes, we know the nominations are in, and we mentioned some of those already. But we're going to talk about our predictions. Maybe some betting. I don't know. Ralph and I haven't really talked about it yet. But we're going to talk about...
Luke cheated last year, so...
We snubs. We're going to talk a lot about the snubs. What
oh,
we think
up,
they missed out
not.
On. What they brought back on. What did you guys say?
He cheated.
He did cheat.
He did cheat.
I didn't know this thing.
We're going to see a physical ballot, okay,
you,
from here.
You can't pick a movie as they're about to announce it. When the horses already started racing.
Yeah, that's exactly
that's exactly
it.
How it works.
You can't
Wait,
fucking
no,
do that.
I didn't do that last year because I wasn't with
we're
you
We're
going to
break your kneecaps.
Well, the year before.
Whatever year it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
I don't care.
We're going to have fun with the Oscar stuff. And in that process, Ralph and I and Luke also, I want you a part of it, Luke. We're going to talk about our next marathon. I actually have an idea for, you know, awesome idea for why we're going to do this marathon thing. We're going to have great ideas for that. And we'll have a next bonus. And just check our website, otherpodcast.com, for any and all updates as you go along.
Oh, yeah.
This is our vacation period. What are we going to say, Luke?
But we might drop the Palm Springs International Film Festival thing.
Oh, okay. I don't know if you want to tease that or not until we for sure did it, because I don't want to promise something and then not do it.
No, we have to. No, no, we have to. You're involved, Oscar.
Yep.
I only do
deep.
All the work in this
he
show.
Went balls
so,
deep.
Yeah, it's not like a big commitment for you.
I'm doing all the talking.
I'm messing with you.
This motherfucker, I'm doing
so,
all the talking.
So tell them again, what is it that you saw that we're going to tease them?
I already closed that list off.
No, not specifically. What is the festival?
Oh. The Palm Springs International Film Festival, since I was there, I was able to see about 12 movies.
Very good. Very respectable number, too.
12. Already ahead on Oscar and movies, new movies.
I don't know.
Oscar's oh, shit.
Oscar's only got 11.
I've only seen 11 already. Yeah, I haven't seen one yet. But anyway, Luke and I are going to have a discussion on that as a bonus episode at some point. Maybe we'll make that February bonus. Maybe a strange bonus we could put on.
Yeah, we'll drop it in sometime.
We'll figure out. We'll figure out something. Until then.
Smooth.
Oh, I'm dropping my phone here. All right. Until then, my little cinephiles, I am Oscar.
Ralph.
And Luke.
See you later.
Deuces.
Look, everything in this world is running exactly on schedule. Besides, to leave, we probably have to wait until the movie's over or something.
Well, when is that going to happen?